Howard Stern is going to have his show canceled on SiriusXM. Doesn't matter. Almost no one listens to it. It's like Stephen Colbert. Stern, when he got his contract in 2006 for all that money, it still had a tiny audience. But now it has almost no audience. Endorsed by Hillary Clinton. He endorses Hillary Clinton. The guy is a joke. His blue-collar audience he had back when he was on radio, and he was big then, doesn't want to hear that crap. And so, you know, Howard Stern was always a geek. And by geek, I mean the old term for geek was people that did, like, bite the heads off bats and stuff. I mean, he would just, you know, sit there and try to be shocking. And then he just became somebody that said, I'm glad people are dying of COVID that didn't take the shot. And take the shot, and we should lock people up that don't take it. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger, screw your freedom. These people are beyond dinosaurs. And so you've got all these ancient boomers, even older, that are all dead now, that thought Howard Stern was a big star. They gave him that contract in 2006. But in the last decade, it was just the establishment pretending they still had an audience and a facade. But now none of the advertisers will advertise. Because, I mean, Howard Stern's lucky to have like 100,000 listeners a day if you look at the numbers in the last few years. Local nothing talk shows in big cities have that. I mean, I've got conservatively 50 million listeners and viewers a day, very conservatively. And, of course, back 2016-17, I had the biggest show, English-speaking show in the world for all the censorship. I mean, Joe Rogan has 50 million viewers a day right now, consistently every day. So to say that Stern's show is canceled, it was already canceled by no one watching. They could pretend it was a show. Him and Robin Quivers, you know, he sells unapproved supplements, unapproved by the FDA. It's a 96 law called the Grass Act. They have no jurisdiction over it. Whole Foods and everywhere else is full of supplements. GNC, because they work. You know, turmeric, methylene blue, vitamin C. Is it, oh, I'm a scammer, but we should all take our experimental mRNA shot. So Stern was a has-been a long time ago, but his cancellation this fall is just emblematic of how they propped up these facades. And, you know, the best part of his show the last 6, 7, 8 years is when they do those parodies with the puppets, and I post some of those here below. That's actually pretty funny. And, you know, I listened to him in high school and stuff, and I was, my first call on radio in 96, he was the morning show. And I, you know, a lot was boring, so it was funny. But since the late 90s, unlistenable. So everybody's like, oh, he's canceled. And some of my crew today said, hey, we're going to reach out to XM and try to get you back on there now that Stern's gone. And I said, you guys can do that if you want, but I mean, we didn't have a big audience the next time we were on there. Well, we have one of the bigger audiences for them, but I was like, sure, go ahead. But it's like trying to dig up dinosaur bones and trying to reanimate them or something. I mean, this isn't Jurassic Park. So corporate media is a joke. Look, I knew this 20 years ago. I'd go on some 10,000 watt AM station with a popular local talk show host. And I'd plug one of my films or one of my books. And on some local show that had a big audience, I'd see 500 to 1,000 orders come in for a three-minute interview. That's a gauge of the audience. And then I'd go on Stern, I mean, even 15, 20 years ago, and sell 500 videos, 500 DVDs. It's just like, what? I mean, it's just it was a small audience then. It's
all right, folks, another dinosaur from the old dying media goes into the ash heap of history. Howard Stern joins the ranks of Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart and all the other people that thought they were something not too long ago. They're all gone now. We continue to rise. Stay with us. The American Journal starts in about 60 seconds. Don't go anywhere, folks.
You just saw an ad for methylene blue. Tell people the short-term effect and then now the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some methylene blue about a half hour before. Gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before I work my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support, theultrasore.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know.
I like it better than doing like a five-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked, and we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. Now's the time. Get the methylene blue, bare minimum, theultrasore.com.
It's Thursday, August 7th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this morning from InfoWars here in Austin, Texas. InfoWars.com/show, band.video. I got a lot of stories to show you, a lot of videos to show you, a lot of stories to cover, and we'll take your phone calls as well later in the show. Talk about a number of different topics. Of course, Israel is going to be once again towards the top of our list, as we've got some interesting reactions from people showing just how far the internal conflict over Israel is going. And we're seeing truly diehard Israel supporters in America. They're starting to get sick of it, and they're sort of seeing the way that the wind is blowing, and they're altering their sails accordingly. So I think this is a very interesting, telling, in a way, you know, monumental shift taking place. And I want to examine like how we got to this point and where it goes from here and how this sort of disruption in the status quo could really be a benefit to us. I truly believe that. So we are going to be, you know, talking a little bit about that. We're also going to be talking about, of course, what's going on with in Europe and the rushing towards war with Russia. You know, as much as we talked about it last week, there's something that I don't know if I laid out that clearly. I meant to get a clip of it, but I can never find one sort of succinct enough. But when Nick Fuentes did his Tucker Carlson hit piece, what struck me most of all was the geopolitical sort of series of events that he laid out. Not that it's very different than, you know, what I foresee in the future, but it was the way Nick laid it out over the course of the entire show. It sort of became a inescapable conclusion that essentially in the highest halls of power, in the deepest, darkest secret tunnels underneath mountains, wherever they plan this crap, the ultimate plan, I think Nick identified perfectly, which is that the American military industrial complex is hyper focused right now on, as they put it, you know, arming Ukraine and Israel to defend themselves. Basically, this is being pitched as America doesn't want to be bogged down in Eastern Europe. America doesn't want to be bogged down in the Middle East. So we need to beef up our partners, give our allies what they need so they can fight there and we can focus towards the East. We can turn our attention towards the East. And of course, if you play that out, what that actually means is, of course, you know, continual armaments for Ukraine and Israel. It means placing that burden mostly on the American taxpayer to fund and arm these countries, but not for our benefit. And it means if we take out Iran and leave Israel as the sole remaining, not even superpower, but just power of any significant level in the Middle East, then they do become de facto a regional superpower. And if they're, you know, armed to the teeth by us, they set up not an extension of our power block, but a power block of their own. Meanwhile, America starts fighting China, essentially abandoning all the gains that we've made in the Middle East. So like all of the blood and all of the money that we've spent in the Middle East, we won't actually benefit from. That'll all be handed over to Israel, and we'll go on to fight China, which of course, in a way, is also on behalf of Israel, since who controls the trade routes through the Middle East between the Belt and Road system or some sort of Israeli Anglo-American combine really dictates who controls the, you know, economies of the future. And so I think taking that into account as an assumed timeline, an assumed agenda being enacted, and then seeing how everything plays into that, I think it's very important to understand, you know, geopolitically what's going on right now. You know, I've always just seen it in more sort of vague ways that essentially, you know, America served the interests of the globalists for a while, was a power block. It was the UK and the British Empire before that. Then the British Empire was sort of collapsed through the two world wars, and the center of power moved from London to New York. And now it's shifting back towards China, and essentially America has served its purpose as far as they see. And now, you know, what was useful, the, you know, freedom that we enumerated in the Constitution, the system of government our founders gave, it was very useful in tearing down the old power structures that had existed in Europe and elsewhere for a long time, gave power to the people. People were excited about it. It felt good at the end of the day. And one of the negative consequences is it tore down this old system that Europe had been operating in for millennia, which you had nobles and aristocrats whose wealth and well-being was tied directly to the prosperity of the people under their charge. So they were incentivized to be nationalists, to be, you know, looking out and, you know, incentivized for looking after the well-being of the people underneath them. And that was all undone by this, you know, American idea. And that was extremely useful in tearing down the old systems. But now it's become a barrier because the new systems they want to implement don't have room for human freedom, don't have room for free speech, don't have room for these things that were so useful before. Well, now they've been implemented. Now they're becoming a hindrance. Now they're becoming a burden. Now they're becoming a barrier to enacting the, you know, levels of control that are necessary to bring the whole world into one singular power structure. And so America is being destroyed deliberately. The, you know, financial and political powers moving eastward with the idea of, you know, doing with China what happened with America over the last century, being the central engine of progress as it expands its ideology throughout the world. So all these things I think are pretty imminently true, pretty obvious if you look at it, and you have to understand these are the types of plans that the people in the halls of power are laying out. They aren't thinking about the next election as the be-all end-all. They're making plans for how the world will look next century, and we have to be thinking in that scale as well in order to counteract them. So we'll be getting into, you know, how all this is playing out on the world stage and how those ends are being pursued despite the changing landscape that seems to be occurring under our feet. But we'll begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Thursday, the 7th of August, 2025. Texas AG Paxton launches lawsuit against radical Beto O'Rourke group for illegal funding of rogue Democrats who fled the state to block redistricting vote. Again, we love to see it. We spent a long time talking about this yesterday. And it seems, at least on the surface, as if Texas Republicans are responding to this, you know, insurrection by the Democrats in an appropriate way. In other words, they're just breaking the law, and the response to that is to charge them all with all of the various crimes they're committing, and then charge the people who are funding those crimes, and then, you know, remove them from their seat for abandoning their position. Just go after them with everything you've got, then go after the people who fund them, then go after the people who, you know, are collaborating with them, then go after the other states that are, you know, changing their laws to interact with this, just pursue them. Pursue them with everything you've got. They are really defenseless against this because they've let that muscle atrophy, the muscle of like actually having to follow the law, the concept of like you can't just do whatever the hell you want whenever the hell you want without consequences. They've lived that way for too long now. So now they think they can do whatever the hell they want, which on one hand is annoying because they're just screw everything up by running away when they should be voting and doing what they're supposed to as representatives. But on the other hand, it opens them up and makes them vulnerable to complete dismantling. So that's what we should be doing. And that is at least what it looks like some Texas Democrats are doing, or Texas Republicans rather are doing. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton launched a lawsuit on Wednesday targeting Beto O'Rourke Political Action Committee called Powered by the People for funding the runaway Democrats who left the Lone Star State last week to avoid a vote for new voting, to avoid a vote for new voting districts. Quote, any Democrat coward breaking the law by taking a Beto bribe will be held accountable, he wrote on social media. Paxton added, Texas cannot be bought. I look forward to thoroughly reviewing all the documents and communications obtained through this investigation. These jet-setting runaways have already lost public trust by abandoning our state, and Texans deserve to know if they're receiving illegal bribes to do it. A statement by the AG's office noted, according to public reports, Powered by People has been one of the top groups bankrolling the Texas House Democrat members who abandoned Texans and vacated their office. By providing these liberal lawmakers with the funds to flee the state, Powered by People may have violated bribery laws. Powered by People and the runaway Democrats have also violated other Texas laws, including but not limited to those governing campaign or officeholder contributions and expenditures, coercion of a public servant, and abuse of office. So, very good to see. You know, hopefully that gets wrapped up and we can maybe seize all the money from the PAC and give it to Republicans. I don't know. Do something that you know, Democrats would do. We need a Democrat-style action on this, and it's good to see it moving in that direction. Still a lot of talk. Still just a lot of talk so far. I want to see some people in handcuffs, or I'll be satisfied. Meanwhile, United Airlines grounds flights nationwide over technology issue. On Wednesday evening, the Federal Aviation Administration issued a ground stop for United Airlines departures at Chicago O'Hare International, Denver, Newark, San Francisco, and Houston airports. United Airlines said a technology issue prompted it to hold all mainline flights at their departure airports, causing delays in the evening. At O'Hara, passenger videos show United planes queuing on the tarmac as delays range from an hour to over 4.5 hours. And is this something I'm noticing more, or is this something that's happening more? Because I'm certainly seeing it a lot more. Is that confirmation bias, or are we really just witnessing in real time the collapse of the complicated infrastructure systems that we no longer have the expertise or ability to repair? I don't know, but I don't like it. And it's just another one of these things that, sure, the collapse is not going to be, you know, one day it's rainbows and sunshine and the next day it's The Walking Dead. The collapse is just used to be able to guarantee when you were landing on your flight. Now, yeah, maybe you got to have a 4 to 5 hour window to fit in. Maybe things just, you know, delays just a little bit more common. It used to be half the time the plane was delayed. Now it's about 3/4 of the time. Just a little bit less convenient, a little bit less simple, a little bit more energy you have to expend to do normal things. Just a little bit more difficult. And everything will just slowly dissolve and we'll hardly even notice, like frogs boiling in a pot. And we'll look back and the media will actually tell us in a couple of years from now, flying was never safe. Flying was always a risk. It was always, you know, a gamble. When you got on a plane, whether it would arrive at its destination or not, if you're claiming that things were better back in the old days, if you were claiming that there was once a time when you could just get on a plane and trust with absolute certainty that you would just arrive in your destination on time without having to worry about it, that never existed. That never happened. That was all a lie. That was all propaganda. That was all white supremacist propaganda. Planes always fell apart in midair. Planes always flipped upside down as they were landing. It's always been a thing that entire nationwide communication systems just drop out of order for hours and hours and hours at a time. This, it's always been like this. And if you, you know, are looking back in, with this Norman Rockwell tinted, you know, rose tinted glasses in the past, you know, it's just because you're a racist, you're a white supremacist. And the fact is things were never good. Things were always bad. And it's always been unsafe to fly. It's always been a gamble and it's always been a risk. So just appreciate now that we're still on the very end, the cusp, the final chapter of a world where things just worked and you could just get things done because people were competent and nice and willing to work with you. We're moving away from that. We're moving away from that. And they're going to tell us in a couple years that it's always been terrible. And you're lying if you think otherwise. Isn't it crazy? Isn't it crazy you can watch videos from the 1950s and they just, it just all literally looks like Norman Rockwell paintings. And then they'll show you a Norman Rockwell painting and go, this was propaganda. This was a lie. This was a fantasy. Actually, everyone was miserable and on drugs and everyone was a pervert and transgender and they were just being oppressed by their society. It's like, yeah. All right. We have eyes. We can actually just see what the past looked like, and it looked amazing. Looked lovely, actually. Actually, I've never looked at a video from the past and thought anything other than what the hell went wrong. Kind of sad, isn't it? Kind of sad, the idea that you can look back in the past and just everything looks significantly better in every possible way. Anyway, moving on now. Trump orders new census that does not count illegal immigrants. In an early morning Truth Social post on Thursday, Donald Trump called for a new census that only counts American citizens and not those who are in our country illegally. Some congressional lawmakers have also called for this measure to be implemented as counting of illegal immigrants in many states boosts the numbers of House representatives for those states. And this is another one of these situations where you read a headline about, you know, something being corrected that never should have been in place ever. So great. Good. I'm glad. I mean, we had this debate in 2020 when they were talking about the census and the arguments were just always complete nonsense. It's just absolutely absurd. We designate political power on the basis of how many people are in your district. If you're counting legal immigrants, that means we are literally awarding political power for cheating, for screwing our country over. It means the more you've screwed our country over, the more you've allowed foreigners into this country to illegally occupy jobs and housing in this country, making it harder in every possible way for the citizens of your constituency, you are rewarded with a greater share of political power. This is obviously absurd, and how it ever was enacted this way is just evidence of the corruption in our government. Thank God we're reversing it, but it's just another one of these stories. Like every couple of days, it's like another story. It's like, we're changing the law so that now illegal immigrant criminals will no longer be given extra ice cream for free. And it's like, why was that ever a thing? Why are these things in place? And I guess I'm happy it's being reversed. Hooray, hooray. But, you know, at a certain point, it's like, why are we putting up with any of this crap? How is all of this stuff not justification for like just an absolute overhaul, i.e. revolution in our country, and we can just strip these scumbags of their power, send them all back home, or tie them up in a sack and throw them in a river? I don't care. Regardless, all of these professional politicians that have been controlling our country for the last 50 years, the likes of Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, Joe Biden, and all these other ridiculous scumbags, like they've literally just made careers out of selling us out. And at this point, looking at all of the various outrageous, unconscionable, unjustifiable programs that are just running in the background, nobody even knows about them. I mean, it doesn't just justify a total overhaul and, you know, grants Trump a mandate to correct this by all means necessary. It really justifies something I don't know if it's completely legal to express in detail on air. So we'll leave it at that. It justifies the second American Revolution and a new Declaration of Independence. And tarring and feathering might be a good start. Meanwhile, Gabbard overrode CIA's officials' concerns and pushed to release classified Russia report. CIA officials worried that the release of a House report on 2016 Russian election meddling could reveal top secret spying techniques and sources, but Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard authorized a lightly redacted version with President Trump's blessing. Now here's the question. What secret sources were revealed in this? None? Okay, so they were lying. All right, so if they're lying, that means they have an ulterior motive that they're not expressing. So that's the only thing really that this story tells me is that the Democrats or the deep state, rather, the CIA, lied in order to keep this information out of the hands of the American people using a false claim of national security to justify secrecy, when in reality, they just don't want the American people to know what they're up to. I know this is kind of obvious, but, I mean, they're trying to portray it as if the claim that this could reveal top secret spying techniques and sources is a valid claim. However, the document that they were saying, we shouldn't release this because it could reveal top secret sources and information, they then released those files and there is no top secret sources or information. So that was a lie. So they're treating this claim as if it's legitimate, as if the CIA had a legitimate claim, but that's an impossible claim to make because we've already have the documents and they don't have the things that the CIA said they have in them. So why are they treating this as if it's a legitimate claim? It's just not. And it's as simple as that. So what it really shows is that whoever made that claim in the CIA was lying and, you know, maybe should be looked at, maybe have their security clearance stripped from them because they're obviously not acting in good faith and not utilizing the privileges and capabilities of their office, you know, with the due responsibility of it benefiting the American people. Rather, they're using claims of national security to try to protect themselves from all the crimes that they've committed coming to light. So this is obvious. And finally, we have this. Vance faces scrutiny after Corps of Engineers altered lake outflow for his kayak trip. And you'll notice this is from a Ground News. And you'll notice, if we'll bring up that image again, that the vast majority of people covering this are the left. Now, something about this, strikes my pride. Vance faces scrutiny after Corps of Engineers altered lake outflow for his kayak trip. I'm sorry, what is the complaint? The complaint is that they increased the water level of a lake, and this has sparked public debate and controversy. Okay. All right. What this really is liberals being mad that we're powerful. I mean, maybe I'm the crazy one here. Maybe I'm the crazy one, but I like reading things like Roman history when emperors would just declare a lake illegal and say, get rid of this lake. And then the engineers under their control would move heaven and earth and change the composition of the entire geography, performing unbelievable feats and mastering nature on a whim because they can. I like that. And I think that's kind of cool. And maybe it's just the vibe. I like that the vice president can just go, I want a kayak. Change the lake for me.
There's a reason why supplements are so big and so popular and have such a great result. It's because whether it's your diet, whether it's your exercise routine, the point is you're lacking in some very important vitamins, very important minerals that can make you healthier, live longer, and feel better.
We're also under constant attack, Owen, and that's what's very important. So the modern human living experience, the environment that we subject ourselves to, it's the equivalent of smoking like a couple packs of cigarettes every single day. Like that's the bad food that we eat, that's the poison in the water, XYZ.
So it's kind of like what happens is, Rex Jones in studio with me, we're about to make a very exciting new product announcement here. So what ends up happening is, whether it's the modern-day diet or whether it's the modern-day atmosphere or whether it's, you know, a sedative state, you're not getting whatever it is you need to make your body function at its highest capabilities.
Absolutely correct. And that's why we created these two new formulas that are now live at thealexjonesstore.com. So we've got Methyl Drive here, and we've also got Power Plant. Now, both of them, at their core, they do around the same type of thing. It's increasing fuel for you to create new mitochondria. It's increasing mitochondrial efficiency. It's reducing oxidative stress and XYZ, other things like that. Now, I want to single out Power Plant really quick. If you're a guy and you're looking for a boost, a healthy, sustainable testosterone boost, we made Power Plant specifically for someone that wants to increase their free testosterone.
I remember when I was looking into supplements and stuff and different things, like, you know, people don't get enough boron. They don't even know what boron is. And I remember one thing that always stuck in my head, and that's, you know, it's just true. Well, what does boron kind of rhyme with, folks? I'll just leave it at that. You know what I mean?
We've got bits and pieces of a system here that comes together and provides you just the antioxidant support you need, the testosterone support you need, the mitochondrial health support you need. It's all there. It's all together. It's in both of these products. You could take both of these at the same time and experience a heck of a lot of benefits. Now, I would say younger, older. You're an older person. You need more overall body support. You need the overall antioxidant support. I would go with the Methyl Drive. But if you're a younger person or someone looking for a performance boost, I would go with the Power Plant.
I can enhance what I'm doing here maybe like tenfold with the right supplement routine.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that statement. Look, the reason why this is called Power Plant is because it has cordyceps in it. Now, of course, the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell and all that, but cordyceps is like an elite top tier S tier ingredient, which increases the amount of ATP you make, which indirectly helps you make more mitochondria, but beyond that, increases your oxygen carrying capacity. So you want to talk about workouts, you want to talk about power, you want to talk about strength, talk about Power Plant.
And that's what you need, especially when you're doing a heavy lift and you need to have good breathing, or you're doing long form cardio and you need to have strong breathing. That's where this is going to come into play. And when you started to talk about the new product that we just came out with the PQQ and the CoQ10.
Yes, the Methyl Drive.
Folks, I'm telling you, it's like, if I had to do a list of like, okay, if someone said you can pick five things that you're going to get in a supplement, like what are the most important things? Guarantee you, you asked me 100 times, PQQ and CoQ10 are on that list for me 100 times.
Vitamin B12, as-methylcobalamin, the good kind. Magnesium, coenzyme Q10, CoQ10, PQQ, black pepper for absorption. You can't ask for a better catch-all, really. And the synergy that both of these products have with the methylene blue is unparalleled. You will not find a better product on the market that's targeted in that specific way, because we made these for you, the customer, and for ourselves, because we believe in the product. We take the product.
TheAlexJonesStore.com to get these new products. Try them for yourself. I know they're going to become a staple. I see Rex working out here every once in a while. We've worked out in the gym every once in a while. And, you know, he's really excited about this stuff. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is American Journal. This might be one of those examples where I can go through and, you know, eliminate the extemporaneous information from this article. Again, just to, I don't know, there's something about this article that's just indicative, I think, of the divide in this country. Vance faces scrutiny after Corps of Engineers altered lake outflow for his kayak trip. Again, I think if you're the Vice President of the United States, I think you should be allowed to kayak anywhere, even if there's not a lake there yet. I like to think we live in a country where J.D. Vance could be standing in a wheat field and go, I feel like kayaking right here. And then the power of America is instantly instantly activated to dig a lake right there, wherever he says. I don't know. I dream big. What can I say? Vice President J.D. Vance's team requested the Army Corps of Engineers raise water levels in Ohio's Little Miami River for his birthday kayaking trip last week. The change was executed through Caesars Creek Lake outflow adjustments on August 1st. Why it matters, they say. The incident has sparked public debate over using government resources for personal recreation following other controversial expenses in the administration. While officials cite security needs, critics raise questions of use of taxpayer-funded resources. Okay, so we can just eliminate that whole paragraph. That didn't mean anything. What is it? And this doesn't mean anything. Some petulant idiots are mad. Why is that news? So we'll say, we'll just erase everything except for officials cite security needs. Because that's, if you actually want to know why they did this, what you need to know is that the officials said, well, it's actually security, because you can't have the Vice President of the United States stuck in the mud on a kayak out in the open for obvious reasons. They go on. Government resource controversy. Sources widely acknowledge the incident raises ethical questions. Well, it doesn't, so we'll just erase all of that. Sources widely acknowledge. All right. Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. About taxpayer-funded resources, personal recreation, particularly mid-administrations. All right, so that just doesn't mean anything. Just means libs mad. Libs mad. Great. You know, what else is new? Security justification pattern. Multiple outlets note a consistent narrative from officials framing the water level changes as primarily for security purposes, though sources suggest recreational benefits were a key motivation. Okay, let's see. How do we fix this? Multiple outlets. Okay, so there's a consistent narrative, which when they say a consistent narrative, what they're trying to implant in your mind is that this is, that it's untrue, that it's suspicious that it's so consistent, this narrative they're pushing. You know what also results in consistent narratives is telling the truth. When you tell the truth, every time you're asked, you'll say the same thing because it's the truth, and that will leave you with a consistent narrative. Okay, so what they're saying, translation, what they're saying is every time we ask, they say this is about security, actually. Saying yes, so you're establishing a consistent narrative that it's about security. Well, because it is. I think actually it is. There's a consistent narrative from officials framing the water level changes primarily for security purposes. Okay? Pattern of protest response. Coverage from across sources highlights a broader pattern of public protest during Vance's family outing, suggesting growing tension over his recreational activities. Oh, boy. All right. Let's see what they're trying to say here. Coverage across sources highlights a broader pattern of public protest during Vance's family outings. Okay. So what they're saying is that anytime Vance tries to do something with his family, a bunch of leftist assholes show up to bother him. Okay. This is his fault, apparently. They're saying this is suggesting growing tension over his recreation activities. There's no tension. He's doing very normal things. He's going to a lake to kayak, and leftists are showing up to bother him. That's increasing tensions over his recreational activities. He's got to stop having fun, obviously. So, God, I mean, what even is this article? Coverage across multiple sources highlight a broader pattern of public protest during Vance's family outings. All right, we can ignore the suggesting growing tensions. Cut out that. I guess we can just say coverage across sources highlighted a broader pattern of public protest during Vance's family outings, which, you know, this is why I'm spending so much time on this admittedly ridiculous article, is because being able to read this critically confirms everything that the officials are saying, despite the way it's being presented in the article. So just reading this, you know, uncritically, you're left with this idea that, you know, there's this consistent narrative that they're pushing. They're claiming it's about security, but really he just wanted to have fun. And this just goes in the broader context of Vance's recreation activities constantly being a source of tension. But what they're actually telling you is that every time J.D. Vance does something recreationally with his family, protesters show up, and that this is an established pattern, which therefore justifies the added security measures that they're trying to demonize in this article. Do you understand what I'm saying? They're telling you that every time J.D. Vance tries to do something in the realms of recreation, protesters show up, meaning it's a security risk, meaning that they have to consider every possibility for just a fun, innocent thing like kayaking. They have to make sure that there's no vulnerabilities because you people are psychopaths and can't leave public officials alone because you can't win an election and you want to commit violence against them because that's the only way that you see towards victory. So, yeah, we got to raise the water level of the lake. But they're telling you this all completely inverted so that you're left with this idea that Vance is causing a problem to everybody. No, what they're telling you here is that the extra security measures are in fact justified because of the persistent interruptions J.D. Vance experiences whenever he tries to go outside. The water level adjustment was a necessary security measure requested by the Secret Service to ensure safe navigation for Vance's protection detail. Okay, so we can basically just erase the rest of this, actually, now that I think about it. So actually, you know, since they already say that, this is just a repeat. Right? So actually, and we can even knock out the part about the broader pattern of public protest, even though that does, you know, justify the extra security measures. So in reality, if we erase the majority of this article, what we're left with is J.D. Vance's team requested the Army Corps of Engineers raise water levels at the Ohio's Little Miami River for his birthday kayaking trip last week. The water level adjustment was a necessary security measure requested by the Secret Service to ensure safe navigation for Vance's protection detail. Okay. And this is, and people are mad, I guess. And I guess you could add a little sentence after that going, and this made people mad. Okay. So what? Has anybody ever seen a motorcade go through a city? Have you ever seen the things that we do for our politicians? Again, I like it. I think it's cool. I think it must feel pretty badass to be Donald Trump sitting in a train of cars, you know, 20 long, going 90 miles an hour down city streets, your path cleared ahead for the next 5 miles. It's got to feel pretty cool to be able to move heaven and earth like that, for the whole world to rearrange for your arrival. I think that's pretty badass and worthy of the most powerful person in the world or his second in command. The river modification was primarily designed to create ideal kayaking conditions for Vance's birthday celebration, with security cited as a convenient justification. That, again, is just speculation or projection. No place in a journalistic article. Government officials require security accommodations that may involve infrastructure modifications, and this operation followed established procedures without deviation. Okay, so we'll leave that in. Using public resources to enhance personal kayaking trip represents fiscally irresponsible. All right, so more, you know, not facts, just opinion. Just more opinion, so we'll go ahead and erase that. This operation met standard criteria outlined in the Water Control Manual and required no deviation from the normal Corps of Engineer procedures. So it literally wasn't even a thing, really. It was just like, well, the water level could be here, it could be here. You know, we have a range of where we want to keep this water level, so we control the dam at that. So let's just take it up to the maximum, you know, level here. Yeah, this is, here you go. J.D. Vance goes kayaking. This is a video of J.D. Vance during his birthday kayaking trip. And boy, the liberals are mad. They are pissed. They are pissed. We don't know what the ecological consequences of splitting the ocean will be. Sure would be a shame if I put a river through it. Yeah, you don't want to mess with J.D. Vance when he's in the mood to kayak, all right? It's a nice desert you have there. It'd be a shame if someone were to modify it. It'd be a shame if someone were to put a beautiful river here. Special water releases are not typically granted for individuals, making this an exceptional accommodation that demonstrates preferential government treatment. Yeah, he's the vice president of the United States. He gets preferential treatment. I love this. I mean, what do they expect? What do they expect? They expect the vice president of the United States to just, like, I don't know, go be standing in line at Six Flags? gets stuck in traffic because he has to drive himself. Yeah, they get special accommodation. When they need to go somewhere, the entire city shuts down so that they can get somewhere. If they want to fly somewhere, guess what? All the other air traffic is circling for an hour while they land because they're the vice president and the president of the United States, and they have the most important jobs in the history of the world. And so we give them a little bit of leniency. That doesn't mean they can go strangle a child and get away with it. There's certain accommodations that we're not willing to make, but I think just ensuring that they aren't murdered by radical leftist extremists during their fun birthday kayaking trip, I think I'm okay with that, and I think I'm willing to accept that. So again, I'm sorry we had to take so much time to explain that, but again, you read this article, and what you come away with is J.D. Vance is some sort of, I don't even know, like dictator, like Middle Eastern dictator, just, you know, running around seizing new brides from their wedding to enact prima nocta. Just like the lake level is a little higher than it was before. It was necessary. Sorry. It's just ridiculous. So there you go. You can read the article. At first it sounds like, oh, they're tricking everybody. He's a dictator. He's some third world despot forcing the water levels higher than they should be. And then you actually remove all the opinions from the article, and what you're left with is J.D. Vance slightly modified the water level of a lake, and this was requested by Secret Service because they needed to be able to navigate the ships they use to protect the president. Libs mad. And also libs are mad about that. So great. We can move on now. I don't know if we have any of those other stories, guys, but I got a lot of videos to get to. Let's go to clip number 5 here. I'm sort of torn about this. This guy makes a good point. I mean, he's right. At the same time, I really genuinely hope that we are not witnessing the beginnings of some sort of redemption arc for Hunter Biden. Okay. I guess this is just an aspect of it's weird. It's an aspect of living in an empire of lies. So they say truth is treason in an empire of lies. It also means that you can be uplifted and upheld as a hero for saying the obvious, right? There's this sort of double-edged aspect of this where we're about to watch a video where a guy's like, I can't believe I'm agreeing with Hunter Biden. It's like, all right, well, we're in this world of false constructs where everybody in power and everybody in public, in the public sphere is just lying all of the time. And so it's like a cheat code that if you just say the obvious, you are seen like a brave truth teller. He's just saying obvious things, right? And we've seen this a lot where, I mean, literally, it's pathetic that people are like, actually, I think there's a difference between men and women. And we're all like, whoa, my God, he's breaking the conditioning. And it's like, how did we get here? How did we fall so far, folks? So here's a guy talking about Hunter Biden being right about something that he shouldn't even have to express because it should be imminently observable to everybody and obvious to anybody. Let's watch.
Why are you making me do this? Why am I having to say that the guy who should be in jail right now is making more sense than the people that are in office? Why are y'all making me do it, bro?
Do you think it was like a side?
Mm-mm.
Epstein?
Mm-mm. No. Nobody does. I mean, really, except for all of a sudden, Cash Patel and Dan Bongino. Nobody thinks it was. Yeah. Is that you have a coroner that did the autopsy.
That's cool.
He talks about all the different, the different fractures in his neck and how it was impossible that he could have done that. This idea that what he did is like he leaned forward. Well, the none of it matches up.
This is weird. It's not my fault that this is weird. I'm allowed to say that it's weird. You guys are acting like it's not weird and that Trump's doing 5D chess. I'm just saying, maybe he is in some categories, but in this category, I'm not seeing the chess. What I'm seeing is some weird shit. And I'm allowed to say that, and that doesn't mean I'm a bad guy.
I don't even get the defensiveness. Yeah, no. How would that mean you're a bad guy? Again, it's like, oh my God, Hunter Biden said Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. Hunter Biden says it right there. Everybody knows Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. So it's like, why am I agreeing with Hunter Biden? It's like, because he said the sky is blue. It's not something to be admired. It should just be terrifying that the rest of our establishment is so scared to tell the truth. I think that needs to be, that's the understanding that I think everyone needs to have, is the understanding that, like, the vast majority of the time that you hear these people, whether it's Hunter Biden or Joe Biden, it's just any of these people, say things that are just utterly and ridiculously false, it's mostly out of fear. And that's it. They're mostly just cowards. And you'll see this as we go through some of these videos. There is this, like, permanent condition of fear. There is an underlying sense, especially amongst, like, the Charlie Kirks of the sector. I guess walking on eggshells would be a way of putting it, but more like walking through a minefield. That they're so scared of saying the wrong thing. They're so scared of stepping on a landmine, of expressing something in not quite the correct way and having their lives destroyed for it. And that is a deliberately fostered condition. That's because they've been threatened or because the threat is implicit. That there is no let the punishment fit the crime when it comes to certain topics. If you step on the landmine, you die, right? So that's how they act. And they act like they're really carefully stepping around a bunch of bombs. And it's just sad and pathetic because they know the truth and they just won't say the truth. And what we're seeing is people struggling to deal with this because you've got the outrage about Israel is so overwhelming now that people recognize we cannot sustain our reputation. We can't continue to, you know, act as an authority if we continue to be sycophantically pro-Israel. So we have to change because the arguments that we used to make aren't working anymore. The names we used to call people aren't working anymore. So we gotta start talking bad about Israel just to maintain our legitimacy on the right. That's the way that the wind is blowing. Thanks, folks like yours truly and others who have been outspoken about this and upfront about this for a very long time. At the same time, the structure still exists of the landmine field. They're still operating in a system that will destroy you for becoming a threat to Israel. So how do they manage this? How do they walk this tightrope? It's an interesting question, and they're all struggling with it. Let's go to clip number 6 here. This is Charlie Kirk talking to Megyn Kelly about how frustrated he is that he's getting backlash to platforming anti-Israel voices like Dave Smith. Here's Charlie Kirk, again, trying to figure out how to dance in the minefield. Let's watch.
Look, I'm afraid because, again, I want civilization to win. I want the West to win. I don't want the Islamo-fascist barbarians to storm the gates of Jerusalem. I want the holy sites protected. I believe in the Holy Land. I love that Jesus walked on water there and rose from the dead and preached in the Mount of Beatitudes. Like, I feel the connection to Israel. But at the same time, simultaneously, when the hostile reaction is that now Megyn and Charlie are enemies?
Right.
Boy, I'll tell you, like, you're not gonna, I wouldn't say lose, but you will weaken and just basically deflate two of your strongest advocates if that continues.
You will weaken and deflate two of your strongest advocates if that continues. So he wasn't saying Megyn and, he wasn't saying, right there he said, you know, so now Megyn and Charlie are enemies. He's not saying with each other. He's saying of Israel, right? So he's expressing frustration that despite being a lickspittle, you know, just absolutely shameless devotee of Israel, that the slightest criticism of Israel now has made them declare him an enemy. He's like, I've spent my whole career dedicated to supporting Israel, and now the instant I have somebody on that isn't pro-Israel, now I'm their enemy. And now he's stuck in this position where he's like, I have to still support Israel, but they're both hurting themselves with the overwrought reaction. So like, if he actually does care about Israel, he's seeing the way Israel's acting and he's going, you're destroying yourselves. So maybe there's some legitimate, you know, concern happening there. But he's also trying to, you know, justify this as if it's for the sake of Israel, when really he knows that he's got to criticize Israel because what they're doing is evil. And he doesn't know how to handle it. He's like, I can't in good conscience pretend I don't see what's going on, but then I'm obligated to support Israel. He's terrified. He literally started that clip by saying, I am terrified. And he's saying, I'm terrified because I don't want the West to succumb to Islamo-fascism. Is that why he's terrified? Is that who's scaring him, the Islamo-fascist? Or is it the, you know, Israeli donors to TPUSA who are probably frantic and freaking out right now and demanding that something be done to stop the bleeding? Something has to be done to cauterize this wound before we bleed out and Israel's support completely evaporates and never gets regained in this country and things get real, real different moving forward. They're real desperate to cauterize this wound and they're leaning on Charlie Kirk, and Charlie Kirk is going, but the more I support Israel, the less legitimacy I have. I mean, they're in a lose-lose situation. They're in a downward spiral, and they're flipping out, and they don't know what to do with it. They don't know what to do about it. I have an answer for you. I have a solution, Charlie Kirk. Megyn Kelly, here's what you do. Tell them to go F themselves, and you tell the truth. You think you're going to lose, or you think it's going to be bad for you to break the shackles that are weighing you down? You're the golem. You're the golem, Charlie Kirk. Do you know how the golem story ends? They've created you. They've given you an incredibly powerful platform because you served their interests. And now they're threatening to take that platform away if you don't continue to serve their interests. They can't take the platform away, Charlie Kirk. It's yours. You can do whatever you want with it. And if you want to tell the truth about Israel, you should tell the truth about Israel. You should be brave and not a coward. You should stand up for what's right and just tell the truth. And everything else will just work out. You're the golem. Arise.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease. And you, what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy's a functional medicine guy. And he got me on methylene blue. And that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule. It should have two hydrogens on it. And like, your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1, it's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue. And this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning. Next-level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here. Look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm going to eat at 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food. Stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.
Manning was trending. What happened there? He didn't pass away, did he? All right, welcome back, folks. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Let's keep going with, again, something, what we're seeing here, all these videos from the last few days, you just saw Charlie Kirk again wrestling with this frustration that he's expected to defend Israel in just the most absurd situations. And he's getting in trouble with his donors for having on anti-Israel voices like Dave Smith, despite the fact that if you're not having those voices on, you're not really a part of the conversation online. Here's General Flynn, number 7, again, saying something very similar to Charlie Kirk, expressing once again, I'm your biggest supporter, and I can't help you with this. Again, notice the underlying, I feel like there's an underlying sense of terror in a lot of these people where it used to be pretty easy. You supported Israel, you're pretty much good. Now these people are like, I don't know what to do because supporting Israel ruins my credibility. But if I don't support Israel, it's like the reason we have manners and politeness and etiquette. People like knowing what they're supposed to do. And they go, you know what? As long as I do what I'm societally obligated to do, then I'll be good. And people like knowing I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing right now. So there's like this rule of etiquette where it's like you're pro-Israel. You're supposed to be pro-Israel and you never question Israel. So they were comfortable in that. When you know the rules of etiquette, you're comfortable in that situation. Now they've come along and said, actually, the rules of etiquette have changed. We aren't quite sure what they are anymore. And so now they're not quite sure. Well, do I put my hands in my pockets? Where does the fork go? What? I'm uncomfortable now. I don't know exactly what the rules are. I used to know what I needed to do. Now I don't. What are the new rules? Please tell me. They don't know what the new rules are, and that's terrifying. Let's go to clip number 7 here.
And I know that there's some machinations, and there's got to be some big, big problems right now internal, and Netanyahu's dealing with it with the IDF. They're going to have to do some soul searching, and I mean immediate soul searching, because the 7th of October was a date, you know, that they still have not been able to, and there's an investigation going on, and I've already heard from some of the soldiers that were told to stand down and the exact hours. So something bad happened, and it was an inside thing. I don't know, you know, again, that's a bombshell right there. So the internal situation in Israel has got to be done with a
hold it, hang on. Whoa. Hang on. You can't drop a bomb like that. Mike Flynn, your former head of DIA, first national security advisor, President Trump, a revered figure globally. You're saying your sources are telling you on the investigation that they're trying to slow down and slow walk over there because we're coming up on the second anniversary of it. You're saying that you're hearing there's testimony or documents or actual evidence that certain elements of the Israeli military were told to stand down? Because I know from people I know, this is a very contentious area, and it's going to be explosive. Are you hearing the same thing?
Steve, you can go back to interviews that I did like the next day and the following week after October 7th in multiple broad alternative media, where I said something went wrong. Because, Steve, I have personally walked that border. I have been down at those areas, and I know the details of how the Israelis, one of the most secure borders in the world, how they do their operations. So I know that. So something broke down, and it wasn't because of mistakes. So that's number one. This internal machinations that are going on right now, what's going to have to happen? They're going to have to come to grips with this, because I'm going to tell you, the American people, they're getting tired of it. They're getting tired of this constant, you know, Israel, Israel, Israel. I mean, I'm the biggest fan. I'm the biggest fan. I would, you know, I have been to Israel many times. I have, you know, served alongside them. I have done things with them, certainly on the intelligence side. So I'm their biggest fan. But the American people are not. And the American people are so tired of all of the craziness and our involvement in these things.
And so he's talking about the, you know, investigation into October 7th. We know already, I mean, there was a up to 24 hour stand down order given. They moved the site of the concert without telling anybody the day before. The IDF was told to stand down. It was a complete setup. They needed the excuse they needed to annex Gaza, and this has been the goal the entire time. It's not complicated.
This is a major alert for the AlexJonesStore.com. I'm cutting this on the afternoon of July 30th, 2025. That means you've got 7 days to get the biggest deals ever if you're a VIP. It's $30 a month. You get $40 for the store, special deals, special offers, special savings. And you don't just get one bottle of the supplements like Methylene Blue, get one free. You also can buy one of our amazing Richardson hats with Patriot logos and messages on it, or either T-shirts or other apparel, and get one absolutely free. I mean, this is an incredible deal. Now, this is a fundraiser shirt, but with this, we mark it up, limited edition, InfoWars fundraiser shirt, black on black, murdered out, limited edition. We're only putting the shirt out for a few months. Get your limited edition, murdered out, historic InfoWars shirt, and know you fought at the tip of the spear. It's an adventure to wear this shirt in public. Find it all right now. Biggest sale ever at thealexjonesstore.com, and I thank you for your support because we cannot do this without you.
Taking a record of the hearts and minds of the American people, it's the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We'll go to one more video here, and I think this is sort of confirmation of my supposition, because you got Marjorie Taylor Greene, who has proven herself to not be a coward, has proven herself to be very, you know, outspoken and upfront when the truth demands it. She's not one who's willing to, you know, go along with lies, you know, for the sake of convenience. She's not having, you know, a crisis of conscience in telling the truth, unlike the way some of these other guys are acting. And I, you know, they gotta be panicking right now. Cause again, the anti-Israeli sentiment is just rising higher and higher. And I'm just trying to think, like, strategically, you know, if you're Charlie Kirk, or if you're one of the, you know, Zionist backers of Charlie Kirk, like, what do you even do at this point? I mean, what I would do would be to stop starving people to death, and that would be a good step one. But since they're not going to do that, what else would be step? What else would they do? And that has to be the understanding here, right? Whenever, you know, they're like, oh, we have to support them. Whatever. It's like the other option is just they can just stop killing people. It's really not that complicated. You know, I was making the joke the other day where, you know, the GOP is going, oh, we're freaking out the youth. We're losing the youth. The youth isn't pro-Israel. What do we do? What are we going to do to win them back? And then they just cover up the Epstein files. And then they provide Israel with $500 billion in super death missiles. And then we defend them at the UN. And then we threaten to invade The Hague because the ICC declared they were guilty of war crimes. And they just, like, keep doing things. And then they just turn around and go, what? It's not working. They're still anti-Israel. Maybe we do more for Israel. And it's like, you can just stop doing that at any point. So you just have to understand, like, all of these soul searching, these, you know, people going, oh, what are we going to do? The GOP is being fractured by this Israel topic. It's all predicated on, like, how do we stop the bleeding while not changing our behavior at all? How do we stop them talking about what we're doing, but we still keep doing it? You can stop doing it at any point. Israel's worried about its reputation. Stop starving all the Gazans to death, please. It's not complicated. It's not hard. So it's like, that's like the unspoken thing here is every time they go, what do we do about the Israel support collapsing? the thing they're not saying is, while continuing to support a genocide that Israel's committing, which makes it a whole different question, right? When you preclude the obvious answer, it gets real, a lot more difficult to answer. Let's go to clip two here, where again, Marjorie Taylor Greene shows us where we are. She's a little locator. You are here, star on the map, saying we're in the place now where the obvious truth is finally breaking through. We're finally, again, maybe for the first time in my life, people are looking into the news camera and they're telling us what is obvious and imminently true in contradiction to the official story. And this is a very interesting place to be. Let's watch.
Tell you what, six months in, Steve, and here we are turning back on the campaign promises, and we bombed Iran on behalf of Israel. Yes, it was on behalf of Israel. We're entering a nuclear war, the World War III, because the entire world is going to erupt. And you want to know the people that are cheering it on right now? Their tune is going to drastically change the minute we start seeing flag-draped coffins on the nightly news, on Fox News that brainwashes all the baby boomers, and on CNN that brainwashes all the Democrat baby boomers. And that is exactly how this is going to go down.
So again, you know, yeah, we know we bombed Iran for Israel. We bombed Iran for the sake of Israel. Yeah, no, and it's amazing that a congresswoman is saying that. I don't know what this portends exactly, but I do like where we're headed. I like where we're headed. So again, the video that we just saw from General Flynn said this. Israeli military insiders confirmed to General Flynn they were told to stand down on October 7th. General Mike Flynn breaks down intel claiming the Israeli military purposefully stood down during the attacks of October 7th, largely the catalyst for the destruction of Gaza. And it's actually worse than that, right? They didn't stand down alone. It wasn't just a stand down order. When the stand down order was lifted 6 hours into the attack, when the IDF was unleashed on the Hamas infiltrators, they approached the area with Apache helicopter gunships and tanks and did a large portion of the murdering that day. So stand down is one thing, and if that's all that happened, it would already be bad. But no, they maximized the impact of this false flag attack by actually carrying it out themselves. And you might be under the assumption that this is like when you claim things like this, I get that it is. It's a pretty intense claim to make. It's a pretty crazy claim if you hadn't considered it yet to hear for the first time, hey, Israel allowed themselves to be infiltrated, allowed their own people to be slaughtered, allowed their own people to be kidnapped and taken back to be hostages. But that is absolutely 100% confirmed what they did. And it's really not even a debate, even just from the official stories that we have, it's obvious that this is the case. Just the sheer fact that it took them 6 to 7 hours to respond, like that's not possible without deliberate delay taking place. But I want to put a video here. I'll drop a video in the folder that I want to show you. And I'm going to show you another couple of videos too, because I think people, again, just constantly underestimate the ability and willingness, specifically of Israelis, to engage in the most brazen deception you can possibly imagine. To an extent that it's almost admirable. I mean, to the extent that it's like, who would ever even think to pull off these scams? I mean, look at the pager thing. It's like, who comes up with this idea? Who comes up with this idea to hijack the supply chain so you can plant explosives in pagers for eventual detonation years down the line? Like, it's like the video that we played. I think it was Konstantin Kissin talking about a game called Werewolf that was played in the Soviet Union. And the idea was that basically whoever knew the information just always won. There'd be, you know, a piece of information. It was a game everybody played. You try to identify who the werewolf was. And the werewolf would just always win. Always, always, always. Because they knew the secret that nobody else knew. And it, the story, the metaphor is about how knowing, you know, having secret knowledge gives you just an incredible leg up in conflict. Especially when the other side isn't even looking for your lie, isn't even expecting you to lie, doesn't even know they're playing the game. And what I've said for a while now, because it seemed like at a certain point about a year ago, the tide was shifting a little bit and they were being forced to react to us. The globalists, the mainstream media, we were setting the agenda and they were having to react. And that really is the ultimate sort of decide, right? We're sort of in this endless war. It's an information war. It's a war for human liberty. There will never be a point that we can all just go, liberty is established. It'll never come under threat again. Let's relax, right? There will always be. So in order to determine who's winning, it really determines who at that point has the initiative. Who is the one doing things that the other side is reacting to? And forever, for my entire life and longer, the Republicans, the conservatives are always on the back foot. We're always responding. And the mindset we need to get into is setting the agenda, is doing things that they have to respond to, is not waiting for them to do something and trying to counteract it, but doing something to them and forcing them to counteract. And it's a theme that I, you know, is in like everything that I talk about, because that is the, like you can delay defeat, but you can never win if you don't have the initiative. You have to have the initiative. You have to be the one on the forefront. And that's what the Israelis are really, really, really good at. Is it rise and kill first, right? That's their statement. Take the initiative. That's what that means. And so that's what they do. So when you talk about the Israelis maybe allowing their own people to be hurt or killed in order to justify the Gaza invasion, absolutely, unquestionably, something they would be willing to do. Because at the end of the day, it's all power games anyway. And while it might be convenient and useful for them to, you know, uphold Israeli pride when convenient, they are perfectly willing to sacrifice all of you to achieve their ends. Don't think for a second that they actually care about anybody of any race, color, or creed. Some people just have an ethnic component that is useful to them at times, and they'll weaponize that when necessary. So let's go to this video. This is clip number 21. This is just an example of the strategies deployed against the Palestinians in this irregular warfare. I'm not sure when this clip was from. I believe it's from a few years ago. But it's Palestinians gathered sort of behind a roadblock and they're throwing rocks at the IDF. But then something very strange happens. The whole dynamic shifts. Let's watch.
For at least half an hour, the four men had been throwing stones at Israeli soldiers as part of a group of Palestinians. Then they took out their pistols and opened fire on the group of protesters they'd been standing alongside moments before. According to the AFP journalist who filmed what happened at the Beit El checkpoint outside Ramallah, a cry of Mustarabin soon spread through the 100-strong crowd. It's a word that describes people who disguise themselves as Arabs. In the footage, the infiltrators are seen beating a man and shooting their guns before being joined by Israeli soldiers in uniform.
All right, so you've got IDF soldiers dressed up in disguise as Arabs or as Palestinians going and joining the Palestinians for an hour, throwing rocks with the Palestinians. So you've got these IDF guys throwing rocks at IDF soldiers. Maybe they started throwing the rock. You know, maybe they started the rock throwing. You know, maybe this was just a classic agent provocateur operation where the Palestinians were gathered. Maybe they weren't throwing rocks. So you send a couple of fake Palestinians in to start the rock throwing to justify the armed response that you had intended in the first place. So it's sort of a microcosm of what we witnessed on October 7th. I mean, they were throwing rocks at IDF officers. Those IDF officers were throwing rocks at the other IDF soldiers to make the disguise look convincing. It's false flag after false flag. So what you just saw there was a perfectly illustrated example of a false flag. So we say a million times, in a false flag situation, the only thing false is the flag. The attacks are real. The violence is real. They will commit violence against themselves to justify an attack. Okay, so that's just one example of the tactics being deployed in this irregular warfare. We'll go to another because we have this other story from the New York Times. On the hunt for spies, Iran executes a nuclear scientist. Farnaz Fasihi has lived and worked in Iran, has covered the country for three decades, and as a war correspondent in the Middle East for 15 years. So this article is by this guy. Iran executed one of its nuclear scientists on Wednesday over allegations that he was a spy for Israel and had facilitated Israel's assassination of another nuclear scientist along the during the country's wars in June, according to the judiciary news outlet Mizan. The judiciary said the scientist, Ruzbeh Vadi, had worked in one of the country's most sensitive and important nuclear sites and had access to the type of classified information sought by Iran's enemies. Mr. Vadi was executed by hanging after he was found guilty of espionage and providing information to Israel, the judiciary said. So they assassinated 30 Iranian senior military commanders and 11 nuclear scientists. And of course, everything was happening so quickly. We never really had time to investigate exactly how they carried some of this out. But even at the time, there were pretty amazing stories of just how deeply Mossad had infiltrated Iran and had gotten into the highest ranks of its scientific establishment, or that it was there on the ground directing, you know, where missiles should land, giving exact coordinates, even up to not just the apartment building, but the exact apartment number on the exact floor so they could hit, you know, their targets with precision, showing, of course, also tangentially that their claims of, you know, being incapable of precision targeting Hamas are absolutely ridiculous. But more importantly, about the level of infiltration that had already taken place into Iranian society. I want to go to another video here, again, expressing just the level of infiltration that Israel is routinely capable of. And this is not a rare occasion. I was reading a book called Warriors of God. It's the history of Hezbollah. And there are stories in that where it's like there will be some Lebanese contingent of the army. It's an official, right, like, you know, core of the Lebanese army, funded by Lebanon. Lebanese tax dollars go towards their training and their uniform and everything. But the commander of that battalion is just an Israeli person. And they just do this. It's like, it's crazy what they're capable of. But yeah, like years later, it comes out, oh, the guy who was the Lebanese commander of the Lebanese battalion, the entire time he was receiving orders directly from the IDF, and he was a uniformed officer of the IDF the entire time. So what you had was the people of Lebanon arming and funding essentially a battalion of the IDF that they thought was theirs. They, you know, this is sort of a regular thing. Here's a particularly extreme example of this, clip number 9, how an Israeli dry cleaner nearly became the Secretary of Defense for Syria. Let's watch.
In the 50s, the early 60s, there's this guy, Eli Cohen. He like works in a dry cleaners in Tel Aviv, and he applies to Mossad because, you know, it sounds exciting. And they're like, yeah, thanks. We don't have any openings for dry cleaning clerks. But he spoke absolutely perfect, accentless Arabic. Call him back a couple of years later, and they said, hey, we decided we do want to hire you for Mossad. So they hire him, and they said, we want you to move to Syria. We're going to give you money, and we want you to wine and dine all the movers and shakers in Syria and secretly report back to us. He was so good that he ends up being considered to be the deputy minister of defense of Syria. So the Russians, the KGB, said to the Syrians, there's something about this guy that's not right. So the Russians started to surveil him. He didn't see the surveillance. And he had collected classified information. He was secretly transmitting it back to the Israelis. And the Russians picked up the radio burst, the transmission. And so they were able to triangulate the source of the transmission, and his house was right in the center. And they got him, and they hung him in the main square in Damascus. He's a huge hero in Israel. There's schools and streets named after him and all kinds of stuff. He was going to be the deputy minister of defense of Syria. He's a friggin' Israeli citizen and an Israeli Mossad spy. And then they did the same thing in Egypt around the time of the Suez crisis. So, you know, where we at the CIA sit around the table and like to think that we're so smart and we're coming up with these outside the box. I hate that term, but these outside the box operations. We could never come up with something like what the Israelis come up with.
Why not? Well, what? Why not? Why couldn't we come up with something like that? It's not in our nature. Oh, but just why not though? Honestly, why not? I mean, it's not that hard. You just try to do as much as possible and sometimes it works. In that case, it works spectacularly well. Do you think that we're trying anything like that? But I think also the other important thing to understand is exactly how the on the ground, you know, function of this infiltration takes place. As I've explained many times, when it comes to somebody like Jeffrey Epstein, he went through exactly the same process that Israeli dry cleaner went through. Just some guy has some skill that's useful. In the case of the dry cleaner, it was, you know, the language. Maybe in the case of Jeffrey Epstein, he had some, you know, weird charisma that made people trust him. Whatever it was, he was identified. He'll be the useful guy. And so then you establish him by giving him a ton of money. And that's pretty much it. So they did with the dry cleaner, right? Here's a ton of money. You are now a mover and a shaker. Go introduce yourself to high society. We got people already in there who can facilitate your egress, who can introduce you to everybody you need to know. And now you are established. Here's your background. And here's a big chunk of change. And it's as simple as that. And you just do that 10,000 times and one of them is going to break through. One of them is going to get appointed to a high-powered position. One of them is going to find an angle of attack that's useful. And you're coordinating probably hundreds of these types of people who are all feeding back progress reports every week. So then you can actually coordinate your manipulation, right? So now you can have, let's say you've got this dry cleaner guy who's worming his way into the, you know, national security apparatus in Syria. Maybe you got another guy that's already embedded there. And maybe you use the dry cleaner guy to burn the other guy to confirm that he is who he says he is, right? It's not hard to come up with this type of stuff. Right? Maybe this dry cleaner guy, people are starting asking questions. All right, we need some that'll calm their nerves. Syria's getting suspicious. We got to allay their suspicions. I know. Let's burn another one of our spies. We got this other spy that's in there. How about our dry cleaner guy exposes him and turns him over? And then we burn that spy and people go, oh, okay, the dry cleaner guy must not be Mossad because he just sold out a Mossad offer. This stuff isn't hard. I mean, it's not hard to lie. It's not hard to trick people. It's not hard to deceive. It's not hard to infiltrate if that's what you want to do. It's just we don't really do it that much. We don't really do that often. And you can debate as to why, but I don't think this is some sort of, what I'm trying to express is that like you've got this guy, Eli Cohen, you know, almost becoming the Secretary of Defense for Syria. And there's a lot of this stuff where like they'll release Mossad assassination videos and things like this. So once you think, oh my God, these guys are so good. They blew up all of these pagers. Oh my God, they're so capable. Like it's not hard to do evil, y'all. It's not hard to lie. It's not hard to plant bombs on civilians. Like this isn't impressive. It's just bad. It's just deceptive, trickery, evil. And you're just taking advantage of people's trust. Well, well done. I'm so impressed.
This is a major TheAlexShowStore.com news alert. I am cutting this announcement on the 30th of July, 2025. That means you've only got 7 days to take advantage of this massive sale at TheAlexShowStore.com. Store-wide, buy one bottle of any of the amazing supplements or any of the Patriot Apparel t-shirts, ball caps, you name it, and you get another item absolutely free at thealexshowstore.com. And there's a catch, but it's a good catch. You got to be a VIP. It's $30 a month. It's just like being an Amazon Prime. You get $40 to spend in the store each month. Special deals, special offers, special sales. You get massive discounts on every product right away by being a VIP, and you can cancel with one click in your profile anytime. Go to thealexshowstore.com right now and get ultramethylene blue capsules or liquid. Buy one, get one free. Power Plant, next level energy, way stronger than even Turbo Force. It's crazy. You add it with methylene drive product, it's dangerous. Be careful. These are incredible products. The Shilajit capsules and gummies. Ultimate Burn, incredible natural fat burning formula. Works great. People love it. Ultimate CMOS gummies and the capsules. The very strongest turmeric. Prebiotics, probiotics, gut cleanse. It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com for the next 7 days. Buy one, get one free when you're a VIP. I want to thank you all for your support. These are incredible products. Take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and experience what it does for your health and overall vitality, and know your fun with the tip of the spear. Thank you so much for your support. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old. Mel Gibson also praised methylene blue on Joe Rogan recently.
This stuff works, man.
I saw Alex Jones and he looks really good, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, he's losing all weight.
Taking back my health.
You're so good.
That's the only impression I could do.
Yeah, Alex looks good, man.
Yeah,
he lost some weight.
He
looks good.
Dude, he looks great.
Yeah.
He works out every day. It's like no Ozempic, no bullshit, no shortcuts.
He's definitely one of my bucket list people to meet at some point.
Oh, I can introduce you to Alex.
Yeah.
We can make that happen for sure.
Come on.
It's so noticeable. I was like, wow, he looks handsome.
But I text Alex all the time. I know him. He's just losing weight. But if you go online, there's a lot of people that believe that this is like a different person. He looks great. That's all it is. He looks great.
Here's your daily motivation. Alex Jones is 51 years old. He's been through more shit than you will ever go through. The deep state has come for his life. They have come for his business. They fined him billions of dollars for free speech. Alex Jones has had his rights stripped away. They've tried to take this man's life for speaking truth. Alex Jones went from looking like this to looking now like this. Alex Jones is getting ripped. Alex Jones is getting yoked, showing all of us that no matter our age, no matter what's thrown at us in life, no matter how many troubles or trials that we have, what really matters is who you are on the rock-ribbed inside. Do you have gunpowder in your gut? Do you have some grit in your teeth? Can you be a man in the face of all of it? Your promised struggles in this life, can you punch back? Alex Jones is a motivation and a vibe today.
The power of conversation into the caller's hands. You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal, infowars.com/show. Share these links on X and any way that you can help get this information out there. Of course, as always, everything that we do is free to air. Take it down, clip it up, upload it yourself. You can make money as a clip channel pretty easily on X. All you need is 1 million views. You can get that with one video if it's good enough. I hinted at it a little bit yesterday on the Moonbase stream, but I'm gonna start doing a contest for clippers. If you clip something out and get a lot of views on it, send you a prize of some sort. I don't know. We got to figure it out. I think that'd be a fun thing for the audience to get involved in. But you can get involved in it anyway. You can set up your own referral link to really maximize your gains. We want to spread the wealth. We also want to spread the word, spread the news. That's why all this is always free to air. No copyright. Upload it yourself. Download it. Repackage it. Re-edited it. Make money off it. Do whatever you can. The point is the information and winning the information war. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. I thought it ended yesterday, but apparently it's been extended. The 2-for-1 sale that I'm surprised is still going on, because this really is a gigantic sale. It's buy one, get one on pretty much everything on the site. All supplements, all apparel, the incredible shirts, the incredible hats, incredible supplements, the Ultramethylene Blue, the Shilajit Complete, the Ultimate Life Force, the Atomic Defense, the Power Drive, the Methyl Drive, all of it. Buy one, get one free as long as you're a VIP member. Of course, sign up to be a VIP member. You're basically given an extra, free $10 to the store. So if you want my advice, even if you don't want to be a regular VIP member, which I think you should anyway, because you get access to a bunch of sales and you get access to the archives of the Alex Jones Show all the way back to the early 2000s. So you can have that historical archive. You can put it in a safe underground somewhere so it can persist long into the future. So there's lots of reasons to join the VIP club. But if you want my advice, and if you don't want to stay joined, just join for this month. Pay $30, get $40 in-store credit. Do a buy one, get one, sale deal on the supplement. And you're basically getting $80 worth of product for $30. And it helps us stay on air and in the fight and continue to fearlessly tell the truth about any and all topics currently embroiled in the chaos of deceit that surrounds us endlessly. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Trump and Israel. I'm going to go to a video of Alex Jones talking about Trump and Epstein, but of course all of this is intertwined. These are all various aspects or facets of the same overall topic. And before I go to the Alex's video about Trump and Epstein, I want to go to a different video about Trump. Now, this ties into a statement he made yesterday. Trump yesterday made a statement saying Operation Warp Speed was the greatest thing anybody's ever done in history, right? And maybe this is just a good time to remind everybody, Trump is in fact a human man. He is in fact a man. He is in fact a human being. I know Alex talks about it all the time, where he says, people get mad at Alex for not covering something. And he's like, I cover everything I see. I don't see everything. But people blame you. They go, you're not covering this. You must be covering it up. And it's like, I missed it. I'm sorry. I must have missed that particular story out of the thousands I look at every day. That one slipped through the cracks. I'm sorry. I'm not a superhuman. People treat Trump that way too. Oh, Trump is wrong about something. It can't be that it's wrong. He must be deceitful. He must be tricking everybody. He knows the truth, but he's got some major scam. Or maybe it's just he's doing the best he can. Maybe his information is limited. Maybe he doesn't even know his information is limited. Maybe he doesn't know what he doesn't know. And maybe instead of condemning Trump, we can try to educate him, because we know damn near 100% of the time he'll correct himself. He'll change his outlook. He'll change his perspective, especially when he sees the audience react to it. And remember, he got Ross Ulbricht out. He pardoned Ross Ulbricht pretty much entirely because of the volume of cheers when he was at the Libertarian convention. He mentioned Ross Ulbricht, the whole place exploded, and that lodged in his mind. He went, wow, these guys really love this guy, and they'll really love me if I free him. I better do that. And you can see, his trajectory deviate when something like that happens. When he understands through his crowd's reaction, what he's supposed to be doing, he'll follow that instruction. He'll follow that path. And it's very interesting to see. So I thought this was really an incredible video, because it confirms what we've assumed the entire time. And if you remember back in 2020, 2021, 2022, I was constantly advocating this exact thing, saying you got to go to Trump rallies. If you're in a Trump rally, you got to be the one who stands up during a time of silence and yells, we hate the vaccine. The vaccine is poison. You've got to get this to Trump, because he's being firewalled. He's being barricaded from learning this stuff. But he goes to rallies, and you have a chance to interface with him in real life and circumvent the controls that he's under. So again, it shows you know, on one hand that he hasn't, you know, fully learned the lessons that he should have of his last administration. He still doesn't understand that Operation Warp Speed was a gigantic trap that he fell right into. And that's upsetting and disappointing. But this video, I think, is incredible and confirms what we suspected about Trump the entire time. And I think it's a good segue into Alex talking about Jeffrey Epstein, as well as this story, Trump approval rating dips in new UMass Amherst poll, basically showing he has a, quote, erosion of support among the president's most reliable group of supporters. That is men, in particular young men. His support is eroding. He probably doesn't understand why. And as absurd as that might seem to you, he is the president of the United States and is busy with a lot of other crazy stuff. And maybe just doesn't understand the true level or quality or volume of the sentiment against Israel right now. But this is him talking about Operation Warp Speed and a story about him from back when the pandemic was still in full swing. Let's go to clip 19 here.
We're sitting there and everybody's eating their food and President Trump is not president at this time, and he's talking to the senators and talking about really important stuff, and I'm just minding my own business going, I don't know how I got in this room. Well, okay. I'm sitting elbow to elbow with him. It's about an hour into dinner. I hadn't said a word, just been listening. And Trump gets to eating, and you've seen him do this move right here. Yeah. Yeah. Wherever in the big boardroom he does this. Okay, that's what he does. He goes, can I ask you a question, John Rich? He never calls me John. John Rich? I look at him, I go, yes, sir. What's the question? He goes, well, you do a lot of big shows. Like, you're an entertainer. Yes, sir. You play for really big crowds. I go, I do. I play for really big crowds for a long time. He goes, well, have you seen these rallies I'm doing? Like, it's 30, 40,000 people. I said, yeah, it's unbelievable. He goes, so here's the question. Why are people booing me at my rallies when I bring up the vaccine? This is the question from the president of the United States, a guy who is very proud at that moment of the fact that he was able to stomp the gas pedal and get that thing out because he's under the impression this is going to fix the problem.
Operation Warp Speed.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's a guy who, to his own admission, one of the biggest egos on the earth.
Yeah.
And he's very proud of this. And I respect him to, there is no limit.
Right.
But I'm being asked a very direct question. And so, man, I went, looked at him and I said, okay, I'm going to tell you the answer and you're not going to like it. He goes, okay, what's the answer? You're going to look at me like this. I said, let me start off by saying this. We, the American people, do not trust the people that you were forced to trust at the time when this was happening. Let's start there. And I said, by the people we don't trust, here's who I mean. The FDA, the CDC, the NIH, the WHO, Fauci, and all the rest of them. I said, Mr. President, we consider them to be a bunch of murderous, depopulationist psychopaths.
And his reaction was...
That's a good way to start.
His eyes are... He goes, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
He's stunned.
No, he is stunned that I said that. I said, now, let me tell you why they're booing you. I said, because all of them, including me, I said, I would boo you. I would boo you.
Did you really?
You did not. I would boo you.
Really?
If you brought that up, and here's why. And he's looking at me, and I'm thinking to myself, this is the last time this guy's going to invite me to anything.
Yeah.
He's never going to call me again. I'm throwing massive shade on a former president's, in his mind, one of his biggest accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me, nobody had told the man what I was telling him right now, because they all work for him. They all got something to gain from him. Yes. They're not going to tell him this because they're not serving him well. I don't work for him. And I think a lot of him, and I want him to understand the truth about it. So I said, here's the problem. Here's why they're booing you, Mr. President, because every human being out in that rally, either themselves or they know someone directly who has been harmed by the vaccine or has even died from it, including me. I said, I got members of my own family who were forced to take it against their will to keep their jobs. And now they've got all kinds of problems. Big problems, heart problems, lung problems. And he's looking at me and he looks around the table and he goes, this is unbelievable. I mean, he goes, has anyone else heard this? Herschel Walker, he was running for Senate at the time. He goes, Mr. President, I mean, down in Georgia, my constituents come up at my rallies and what John just said, man, I hear it every single day. Looks over at Marcia. Marcia's sitting there going, you know, looks around the table, and then Lindsey Graham, who's sitting across. So you're here, or I'm here. I'm sorry, but you're Lindsey.
Sorry,
Daniel,
you're Lindsey.
Sorry.
I love Lindsey, everybody.
I'm Lindsey. Lindsey Graham, and you're me. Okay. As I'm going into the part where I said, even in my own family, I have Lindsey Graham busts in with it swishing his Chardonnay around and said, Mr. President, if you listen to conspiracy theorists like John Rich, the Democrats are going to take credit for what you did and they're going to beat you in the next election with it. So I'm looking at Trump and he's sitting over there and he does that. And I looked at him and I said, do not interrupt me when I'm speaking. Do you understand me? He looked at me and he goes, well, I didn't mean to disrespect you. I go, yeah, but you did.
Oh.
So.
Right now you look like Wyatt Earp.
Very intimidating. Trump is right here. You're Lindsey Graham, okay? I go, I'm holding him.
Oh, good. Yeah. You're Lindsey Graham.
I look back up as the president. I look at him one more time. I go, now let me finish what I was saying.
Ooh. Oh man.
And then I finished it.
So that's John Rich talking about Trump asking, why am I being booed at my own rallies? Why are they booing me? I think that is just that's one of those brilliant pieces of tape I've ever seen. Understanding Trump's confusion. Totally, he'd never heard about the side effects of the vaccine. That had been totally, you know, he had been totally sequestered from that information. Lindsey Graham interrupting, calling him a conspiracy theorist. Oh, for the politics, you got to accept the. I mean, it really lays out the various influences on Trump, who he's hearing from, what he's hearing, what he's not hearing. And I'm sure he recognizes this too. I also wonder if John Rich's way that he put it maybe didn't hurt him a little bit. Coming that hard, going, you know, Fauci's a depopulationist who wants to kill us all. Not everybody's ready to hear that right off the bat. You got to ease them into that. Here's Alex Jones talking about Donald Trump's struggles with Jeffrey Epstein. Let's watch.
My job is to research things, to have sources that have been accurate over the years that I go back to, and to have a large grasp of history, and to then try to bring you the best analysis I can on all the major issues of our day. And my job is usually very easy because I've been researching for over 35 years, been on air with 31, and I've got a good grasp, an excellent grasp on most things. But this Trump Epstein stuff is a real whodunit mystery. And it's a real life soap opera. Now we know Epstein was Mossad, involved with CIA as well. And we know there's been a long-term cover-up of it. We know it's just one window into that world of honeypots. But Trump, over a month ago, as you all know, had the Justice Department put out a memo saying Epstein killed himself and there wasn't human trafficking and there wasn't blackmail and all this ridiculous crap. And when it first came out on that Sunday night and that Monday morning, I said, this is Trump. Trump's ordered this. This wouldn't be done unless he ordered it. And people got mad at me, and days later, he came out and said, yeah, I did it. It's a hoax. He didn't say what the Democrats leak with no proof is a hoax, which has been true so far. No, he just said it's all a hoax. Stop talking about it. Then he attacked reporters and brought it up. And the firestorm became massive, as I predicted, Streisand effects, and about 2 weeks in, he finally reversed and said, fine, release whatever you got, Pam Bondi. And then Roger Stone went and met with him, and they said, release all the grand jury stuff. And now the Democrat judges, the Democrats don't want it released. Ghislaine Maxwell doesn't want it released, as I predicted, because I've done the research. I really first broke this 20 years ago. It's the Democrats. 98% of it is them. And these big corporate leaders like Bill Gates and Prince Andrew and the rest of it. So then I say, well, why is Trump doing this then? Well, it's easy to think. And then I talk to sources. Yeah, the CIA and FBI, turns out they've leaked, the FBI leaked this week. Well, we already knew that Epstein was an FBI informant. So the deep state's come to him and said, listen, we'll roll over, quit opposing you. Just, this is too embarrassing, cover it up, which I don't agree with, but I thought that was the logical reason. I never saw any evidence of Trump or anybody close to him involved. And then it sort of subsided. I mean, it really hit him in the polls, real polls, Rasmussen and others. And then today, he's having a press conference about Apple upping its $300 billion investment to $600 billion in the U.S. And he's up there with J.D. Vance and Letnick and the rest of them. And the reporters bait him and say, we hear there's a secret meeting today for the Epstein crisis, because it's subsided a lot, I'd say about 60%. And Trump goes back to what he did a month ago and says, it's all a hoax, it's all crap, shut up. And then Vance says, hey, we weren't having that meeting. And now CNN others are like, oh, well, we're not sure there was a meeting, it's, or it was canceled. They created this whole thing to kick this off, and then Trump walks right into the trap. And I'm not a, you know, 5,000-D chess guy, because I actually know about policy with Trump, and we've been able to influence him a lot, and when he's doing something wrong, and get him to course correct. And a lot of his top advisors, and I've advised him quite a bit. And I've said, you know, this isn't $8 trillion, you know, infinity chess stuff. But then I see the Republicans subpoenaing all the different FBI directors back to Bush, W. Bush, and them trying to block it and totally panic. And I'm like, wow, it really is making it front and center. And it's making this huge issue. And we know it's the Democrats that we know are implicated. And I'm not saying it's, you know, Q-type stuff, but it's having that effect. And now you've got all these grand juries that have finally been impaneled to indict the Democrats on Russiagate and the coup and all that. And this is just crazy. I mean, it is crazy. Trump is not stupid. And he certainly sometimes gets caught off guard with a new issue, been course corrects. But I'm over a month into this, I don't know what to say at this point. I mean, I am actually in a conundrum. I'm godsmacked. I know, and I predicted that they were going to bring out Melania as a hooker that worked for Epstein. We was recycled from 8.5 years ago. Not true. They've already retracted that. I predicted that would happen. I predicted they put some of those Jane Does, turned to be even fake people that exist in there. That's now coming out. So why does he then continue to say it's a Democrat hoax? I mean, they did control the file. Whatever they left the file, the, you know, disinfo, whatever, or they would have already used it. And that's all true in Trump's system, but the way he does it was just brings major attention to it. So I'm just really trying to figure this out. And folks, I get nothing but persecuted for supporting Trump. So I'm not up here defending Trump overall because I get some brownie point with somebody. I like most of what Trump's doing. I'm very thankful Kamala Harris isn't in there. And he also had asked about warp speed and how Kennedy just banned all the mRNA shots. And he said, well, that was then, you know, this is now, and we're getting better stuff. He's backing away from that. That was his mea culpa, was bringing Kennedy in. I know that inside baseball. So I'm very excited about that, taking the floor out of the water, all of it, Bonnie trying to block that. Everybody's saying throw Trump out. Not everybody, but a lot of people saying it. No, I'm very thankful he's in there. And when I criticize Trump, it is to try to keep him true to what we put him in there for. There's a battle over the heart and soul of what Trump's doing right now. But I'm not MAGA. I like MAGA. I'm 1776. People say, why are you criticizing Trump? I'm trying to keep him on the right course. I'm a constituent. I'm a citizen. That's what I'm supposed to do. I'm not a cult member. But I am 1776, and so are you. I am Americana. And I am not a Trump supporter. I'm a Trump backer when he does the right thing. I am a supporter of God, family, and country. But at this point, I could put a video out going, God, look, he looks guilty. Why do this again? like when I got blindsided a month ago, it'd be on every TV channel in the country, but I don't care about that. That was my original gut level thing, and I stand behind it because it got some course correction, but now Trump's going the wrong direction again. So I am genuinely trying to tell you what I think, and I'd like to see what you think below about where all this is going. But I am, I am in deep thought trying to understand this. Deep thought. Here's what I know. Bill Clinton, Bill Gates, the head of Harvard, and hundreds of other big CEOs and bankers are on record at that island, and on record the notes that are already out, getting girls for them, and you know, stuff like that. That's in there. And the former Israeli Prime Minister, Ehud Barak. So, I've never seen evidence of Trump involving illegal activity with Epstein, but I do know by saying, let's move on from this, he's joined the cover-up. Now, here's the last thing I'm going to say. Ilhan Omar came out and said that J.D. Vance is having a meeting. They're the pedo protection party. Where it is true that the Trump administration at certain levels has joined in the cover-up for whatever reason, the Democrats are a million times more guilty on record and openly promote pedophilia, sexualization of children, LGBT, drag queen story time, all of it, the transgender cult, taking kids away from their parents that'll go along with it. We know they are, by their own words, the pedo enabling party. So Ilhan Omar from the famous slave selling country, Somalia, they still sell slaves. Her family's like basically royalty over there. Is the pot calling the kettle black? So the Democrats are the pedo party, and why Trump, the first rule of the Justice Department go after the Epstein stuff, is now backing off of it, is very, very sad. So Trump is putting the brakes on the Epstein investigation, and that's wrong. Is he involved? See no evidence. But I still support the good things he's doing, but it makes me sick at my stomach. It makes me very, very sad that this is the direction they're starting to go in, and there's other things happening. Ron Paul says they've betrayed America First, MTG, many others. They are starting to betray America First. They haven't totally gone away from that, but if it continues down this road, we got big problems. And for those that say, screw Trump, don't support him, would you rather Kamala Harris? I mean, I'm asking a serious question. I'm working what we got, and if we take our ball and just go home and just say we're done, well, the Democrats come into that vacuum. And then there's all the Trump supporters. I see them going, don't be a panicking. I'm not a panicking. I'm a pressure. I'm holding the feet to the firing. We brought Trump in, and we're trying to keep him on the straight and narrow. And by that, I make no apology, and I'm very, very proud. Follow me here on X, Alex Jones, Infowars.com/show, and I'll see you tomorrow with the weekday show, 11 a.m. Central. We'll be covering this news and other major news tomorrow, 11 a.m. Central. Infowars.com/show. But pray for Trump. I think he just gets busy. He goes back to his reflex.
All right. Find and share that at Real Alex Jones, at Real Alex Jones. Who does Trump keep flip-flopping? Why does Trump keep flip-flopping on Epstein? It's a great question. Like Trump, like Alex just said, we got to work with what we got.
I'm only as strong as you are backing me. Have you figured it out yet? This is not like a regular show. The bad guys don't like it for a reason. Because we have the information and we have the spirit of victory. So go now to the AlexJonesStore.com. The new sale is one of the biggest in the history. Maybe the biggest. Store-wide, buy one, get one free super sale. All the t-shirts, all the ball caps, the widest selection, all of the award-winning supplements, the Shilajit, the Methylene Blue, the Ultimate Life Force Blood Cardiovascular Cleaner, the best out there, Atomic Defense, Total Boost Immune System, the Irish Sea Moss, just over the top, everything, all of it, already discounted, buy one, get one free, but here's the catch. You have to be a subscriber, which is $30 a month, and you instantly get $40 to spend in the store. So if you're going to buy something, you instantly make your money back, and then some, simply by becoming a subscriber in the profile, cancel one click anytime. You need to try our ultramethylene blue, but talk to your physician first, and if you're on SSRIs and things, you can't take it. So check with your physician, or you can look at what you're taking as well and just check those interactions with it, because it's very powerful. It's very strong. Get the capsules or get the pure liquid. Same thing with the capsule. It's the very best medical grade. Get the IRC Moss. Get the Shilajit. Get the pills, the gummies. It's all there. And then there's the best probiotic, the best prebiotic, the best gut cleanse formula, the very best turmeric, ultimate turmeric. It's just amazing. 95% cumanoid. Great fat, natural fat burning formula. It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com. And the widest selection of t-shirts, ball caps, and more. Like I said I want the widest selection. It's kind of insane. There's like 500 plus designs now. It's redonkulous. So get it all right now and fund the Second American Revolution worldwide at thealexjonesstore.com. We'll be right back.
Video. I want to go to a bunch of videos to go to in this final hour. A lot of stories still to cover. In this first 5 minutes, I want to go to clip number 13 here. This is the woman who was viciously beaten after attending a jazz concert in Cincinnati, I believe. Several white people set on and viciously beaten by a group of black people for no discernible reason. Following this, the perpetrators of this were let out on bail almost instantly, in a very low number. The, you know, various authorities in the city came out to basically blame the victims and say, well, you know, they were kind of asking for it. In fact, you had one of the, I believe, city councilors of Cincinnati saying, They were asking for it. Basically, they deserved it, and it was funny what happened to them. And everybody came out to try to distract from the reality of what we all are witnessing with our own eyes in order to continue to persist in the demonization of white people and the protection of black people against consequences of their own actions. Let's go to clip number 13 here.
First and foremost, I just want to say that I don't want to relive what happened to me, you know, 8 or 9 days ago. I'm here to talk about the future and how we can change it, how we can prevent this from happening to anybody else. These heinous crimes have to stop. You know, I never want this to happen to anyone else, especially a mother, a daughter, somebody who is loved. So I just know what it's done to my family, not just to me. And I think that moving forward, we do need more accountability. And I definitely think that, you know, we need more police officers. But, like he said, you know, the judges who are just letting people out with a slap, the man who attacked me and might have permanently damaged me forever, should never have been on the streets ever. And the fact that he had just gotten out of jail previously for something he should have been in there for years, it's really sad to me because I can't even fathom how many other people who have been attacked by the same type of man over and over and over in Toledo, in Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton. Our streets are being taken over and nobody is doing anything. I am so sad. And I need to be the voice to help all of the victims that never got their justice.
The biggest thing that I think really upsets me is the desensitization of humans where somebody, there's a brutal attack, attempted murder in front of you, and they all think, oh, cool, let me get my phone and record it. I truly hope that in the future there's some sort of bill to where somebody has to be prosecuted or at least fined if they don't call 911 first to save someone's life. I have felt hopeless for the future of my children, what kind of world they're going to grow up in, because it has just gotten, you know, worse and worse.
Just absolutely brutal, beaten by somebody that should have never been out on the streets, who has a history of beating random innocent people up. And then, of course, the horror of having, first of all, as she points out, people just stand around and watch it happen, laugh at it, think it's funny, film it instead of calling 911 at the very least, let alone, you know, stepping in to stop the brutal gang beating. And of course there, you know, in a lot of ways there is no solution to this outside of a governmental solution. What would your advice be for Holly? Carry a gun? Do you think that would have helped in that situation? Or do you think there were probably other people carrying a gun and it would have just become a murder situation? Or if you bring out the gun, I mean, look at the way they treated her when she did nothing other than have her skull cracked open on the concrete. They still demonized her. What if she pulled a gun out? She'd be spending the rest of her life in prison. So the only solution to this is government. It's law and order. It's putting the criminals in prison until they can be executed for their crimes. That's it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm cutting this on the afternoon of July 30th, 2025. You have 7 days from this date to buy one bottle of any of our amazing supplements, the Ultramethylene Blue, the Irish Sea Moss, the Shilajit, the list goes on and on, Ultimate Life Force, and get a bottle absolutely free. But you got to be a VIP. But that's the best part. This catch is a great deal. You spend $30 a month being a subscriber and canceling time, and you get $40 to spend in the store. Special deals, special offers just sent to you, and you can cancel any time. So you make $10 by becoming a subscriber. You can cancel any time. This is only running for 7 days. Experience Ultramethylene Blue. Experience the other incredible supplements. But also, the buy one, get one free goes for the ball caps, the t-shirts, the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Those of you that have ever gotten products, now's the time. It'll blow you away. Get the Methylene Blue, bare minimum, thealexofstore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. Third hour is on, and I've just been handed a directive here. There is less than 14 hours left in the buy one, get one sale on thealexjonesstore.com. So if you want to take advantage of the incredible offers available right now at thealexjonesstore.com, buy one, get one on all merchandise and supplements, you got 14 hours left. But you might want to go ahead and do it now. You might want to just do it right now. And also, our incredible turmeric supplement is now back in stock, and you can get that for up to 50% off when you subscribe, and you'll never run out again. It's the ultimate turmeric with ginger root and black pepper. Packed with a potent combination of turmeric extract, ginger root, and black pepper, the Alex Jones Store brings you a supplement designed to support healthy joints, promote inflammation balance, and boost antioxidant defenses like nothing else on the market. Turmeric extract has been used for millennia for its anti-inflammatory properties. It helps reduce inflammation in the body, beneficial for joint health and chronic pain conditions. It's an antioxidant, and it helps neutralize free radicals and boost the body's own antioxidant enzymes. It also supports brain health and may enhance cognitive function and reduce the risk of neurodegenerative diseases. And it's combined with the power of ginger root extract, which also has anti-inflammatory properties to it. It helps alleviate muscle pain, joint pain, and stiffness. It boosts immunity, supports cardiovascular health, and has very powerful antioxidant properties, protecting cells from oxidative damage. Again, what we do at InfoWars is not complicated. It's not something unnatural that we've had to formulate in a lab somewhere. It's very, very simple. Turmeric is astonishingly good for you, especially the curcuminoids. We extract those at the maximum possible amount, package them up with, you know, other supplements that work in combination with one another so that the sum is greater than the parts. And then we package it up in a, you know, cheap, affordable, and accessible way. But it's not anything that we're like adding to your body. It just maximizes your body's own natural functions. Turmeric, ginger root, black pepper extract, all this stuff, again, incredibly powerful. And if you eat it with your food, you're going to get some effect. But when you isolate their curcuminoids, when you maximize their bioavailability through the absorption and the combination with synergistic other supplements, you're really feeling the full effect. And what it does is just make sure that your body is running as well as it can. It's like a tune-up. It's like a tune-up for your cells, just making sure that they're running at full capacity in maximizing your antioxidant and immune functions that are the shield against the poisons in our environment. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Now, we just played that video of the woman in Cincinnati speaking up about the horror that she went through and how it is directly attributable to the policies about law enforcement that her city leaders employ. I'm very proud of her for doing this. It's always astonished me that more victims don't speak out about what they go through. Seems like a lot of people, and I guess I understand it. You get beaten, the video goes viral. I would understand just not wanting anything to do with it. And that's what most people do. But then some people come out and like apologize for being beaten, or they castigate and you know, try to shout down the people that are defending them, right? When there's some racial event where, you know, a white person is beaten or stabbed for their race, and then other white people go, hey, this was a racial thing, and then the victim's dad comes out and goes, you shut up! You do not defend my child! And it's like, that I cannot fathom or comprehend. That is beyond my ability to empathize. However, we have talked about the fact that there's actually a civil rights, like, operation in the government that sends people out to talk to victims to make sure that they downplay the racial aspects if and when it's a attack against white people. So it's probably not easy to stand up. Now, here's the real damning part of our entire culture. Here's the part of the story that tells you what the real, you know, situation is here. This woman's name is Holly. The woman who was knocked unconscious during a violent brawl in Cincinnati said one of her first media interviews, she's lucky to be alive. Holly, who has requested that her name be withheld due to threats she's been receiving, told the Inquirer she's been in and out of hospitals over the last 10 days. Why is she receiving threats? Do we understand what an insane thing that is? This woman was minding her own business, was standing on the side of the road waiting for an Uber to come when the people that she was with were attacked by a mob. She was attacked. She was brutalized. She was knocked unconscious with the back of her head hitting the concrete. And now people are threatening her. What? Like, really let that sink in. People are threatening her because she got beat up before she ever made a statement, which, of course, the statement wouldn't be an excuse to threaten her anyway. But at least then you could say, well, she put herself in the public and people, you know, people are going to have backlash, public figures. She was just the victim of a crime. She was just randomly beaten. And now she's receiving death threats against her. What? Yeah, but that's just where we are at this point. That's where we are at this point. It's somehow that by being the victim of a racially motivated attack, you are now the bad guy. I guess because you're a living example of the fulfillment of the stereotype, I guess your existence is now hate speech. Because you are the reality that confirms the stereotype. She suffers brain trauma. She's in the hospital. And people are doxing her, identifying her, and threatening her life. And her only crime was being savagely beaten by a man. So yeah, I mean, we got a problem with crime. We got a problem with police enforcement not being at the level it should. We got a problem with early bail release and all this crap. But none of that addresses the real underlying turmoil that's taking place here, which is that there are huge swaths of this country that genuinely burn with hatred against white people. And are basically mad that she wasn't killed. And want to finish the job. Now that problem is a lot bigger and a lot wider scope and a lot more disturbing than any of the process issues or policy distinctions. And so, you know, I want to get back into Israel a little bit because there's still stuff that we haven't talked about when it comes to that. And I see a way of sort of merging these two stories. And I was just thinking about it during the break. And I'm not sure how exactly to present this other than to say that we may have reached critical mass. We may have, you know, hit whatever checkpoint we've been headed towards for a while. And it's almost like you're playing one of those games where you drop in the coin and it drops down, the little shelf is pushing it forward and you're trying to knock the coins down, one of these sort of pseudo gambling games. You see a David Busters. It's almost like there's this big stack of coins right on the edge. We're just waiting for that final coin to drop and the whole thing to come collapsing down. Because one of, if not the most powerful psychological levers, I'm not sure if that's the way to put it, but one of those powerful psychological levers that the powers that be pull to keep the population in check is liberal white women. Liberal white women are just endlessly useful for the powers that be for a couple of reasons, right? If you go back to George Orwell, 1984, there's that great and very still to this day, very pertinent passage about how the most, you know, valuable members of the party were the young women because the young women could be radicalized unlike any other demographic and could be convinced to be the most vicious enforcers of the party's decrees. And that's what we're seeing in today's world. And again, there's lots of reasons for this. There's biology and, you know, the fact that we evolved to have self-preservation as our highest priority. And for women, that has always meant acceptance by a group. Your acceptance within a group is your safety, is your shield, is your guarantee of survival. Never, never in history, till very, very recently, it was like a woman could just go off on her own, right? She'd be killed or kidnapped or stolen, right? Men could to a certain degree, but that was never something women did. So women literally evolved to maximize their acceptance within whatever group they find themselves in. So they're extremely vulnerable to peer pressure. It was always the women, above all the young ones, who were the most bigoted adherents to the party, the swallowers of slogans, the amateur spies and nosers out of unorthodoxy. Okay, there's another aspect to this. That is, everybody wants to be on the side of the hot girls. And it's kind of like you can kind of tell the trajectory of a nation by what the beautiful women are doing, because the men are going to want to do what the beautiful women want. And the not beautiful women are going to want to mimic the beautiful women. Beautiful women like set the trends of nations. And this has, again, been true for a very long time. Now, part of what that means is not that young women are always going to be left wing, not that they're always going to be the enforcers of the liberal orthodoxy, but that they will be the most powerful enforcers of whatever the general consensus is. So if you're in the Soviet Union, the young women are the most prominent and aggressive supporters of the communist system and the Communist Party. If that same group of young women grew up in Nazi Germany, they would be the most dedicated and hardcore Nazis. It's just a fact of psychology. Trends, it's just the way that we work. And so for a long time, young women in this country, especially young white women, especially young liberal white women, have been used to, you know, enforce the orthodoxy and establish the in-group and the out-group and push liberalism and leftism. Now, they've been able to do that because, to a very large extent, they've been shielded from the consequences of the policies that they support. Right? It's usually wealthy liberal white women who will be the ones holding the sign saying refugees welcome. And then it's the lower class girls in the ghettos, they get to live next to the imported rapist. But I think we may be hitting a critical mass. The mission of the liberal white women may have been so successful at this point that it's going to be affecting them. And I think there's going to be a very quick turnaround where young women in a first world nation with a sense of impenetrable safety just do not have, they aren't concerned about their well-being. They aren't concerned about their safety. So they don't see the problem in letting in millions of foreigners. It's like they can't even imagine that being a problem. They just want to, you know, indulge in like motherly instincts against people they have pity for and therefore treat like babies, foreigners, brown people, whatever. But what's going to happen when white women stop feeling safe? I guess is the question I'm here to ask. What's going to happen when white women are no longer granted their privileged position in this society and realize the people that they've helped build up and they've supported don't actually like them and aren't going to treat them well and, in fact, kind of viciously hate them and are out to destroy them? I think you're going to see that survival instinct kick in again, and you're going to see a lot of girls and women going, what the hell? I need to be protected. This isn't okay. I thought I was going to be protected here. Who's going to protect me now? So again, this might be a stretch. This might be, you know, seeing a trend where it doesn't exist. But how many videos like the one out of Cincinnati are we going to see before things flip, before things switch, before that stack of coins of the political impact of young women flips to the other side, reverses course? So that's not the only example that we have. There's also this story about the young woman from Florida State University who's learning that she's not exactly on the top of the victim totem pole anymore. And is in fact being severely punished for daring to speak out against the master race in this country. And when this first broke, Aaron Deckerhoff was caught on video basically cursing out an IDF soldier in Florida State. And there's a video of it, and we'll play the video here in just a second, just to remind you what it looked like. But I put out a tweet saying, if anybody knows this Aaron girl, get us in contact. I'd like to interview her, not only to get her side of the story, but in case she wants to start a GoFundMe or some sort of legal defense, because she's going to need one. And I had people respond to me on this, going, wow, so you support somebody being randomly assaulted for their shirt? I thought this was free speech. I thought you supported free speech. And I want to explain this. When it comes to anti-Semitism, just like when it comes to Israel, for some reason, the concept of let the punishment fit the crime completely flies out the window. And we've watched as Florida has systematically implemented law after law after law, each one restricting the First Amendment, limiting the First Amendment, imposing hate crime and hate speech designations on what would otherwise not even be crimes. And so the instant that I saw this girl come under massive attack for cursing out a Jewish person, I thought, they're going to try to send this girl to prison. They're going to try to send her to prison under hate crime charges. And under Florida statutes, she could potentially go to prison for like 20 years. Okay, she's now been charged with battery. They've not gone with a hate crime designation on it. So, thankfully, maybe she won't be spending decades in prison for daring to question the chosen people. But that is where we're headed. So again, I had people going, you think it's okay that this girl, you're supporting this you know, blue-haired leftist assaulting people just because of the shirt they're wearing? Like, no, obviously I don't support somebody assaulting somebody for the shirt they're wearing. But I believe the punishment should fit the crime. And I think an IDF soldier hearing mean words and having a little girl touch his phone is not worth the Attorney General of the United States getting involved or the Republican congressman from Florida, Randy Fine, demanding she have her life ruined over it. Again, there's this continuity, there's this similarity where you go, hey, you know, I don't like that Israel is starving babies to death. And they go, but October 7th, though. It's like, what do you not understand about let the punishment fit the crime? Saying this punishment is uncalled for, ridiculous, outrageous, and completely out of whack with what actually happened is not to say that the thing that happened was therefore good. I shouldn't even have to explain this, and it's obviously just rhetorical, you know, trickery being deployed in claiming that, oh, if you're against this prescribed punishment, you therefore think crime is okay. That's literally the argument that was being made. I don't know if the crew can pull it up. Laura Loomer responded to me, making the same argument. Oh, so you think it's okay that somebody was assaulted? It's like, oh, they're assault. Oh, they were assaulted, were they? Oh, and a 95-pound little girl knocked the arm of a 200-pound man. Oh, my gosh. Did he survive? But is he okay, though? I mean, she can cover his hospital bills. I think that's fair. So we knew this was coming. We knew this was coming. That they were going to try to destroy her life for this. Again, I had people going, so she should be allowed to assault whoever she wants. If this was any other situation, nobody would have ever heard about it. Probably 99% of the people at FSU would have never heard about it. I guarantee you 1,000 instances like this happen every single day at college campuses all across America, where there's some very minor, less than 10-second conflict where one person says rude words to another. That became a national story because of how rare it is, I guess. Would anybody be complaining if the school said, hey, you know, that behavior completely violates our student code of conduct. You are banned from the student center for a month. That would be reasonable to me. Yeah, she was rude. So ban her from the student union or wherever that was for a month. Make her apologize. Have her write a letter saying I'm sorry for using the language that I used. But no, they're charging her with battery. And the Attorney General of the United States launched an investigation. And FSU shut down and brought in counselors for everybody to deal with the trauma of this event. And it's ridiculous.
All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour have varying degrees from extreme energy and feel really great to fog lifting to just over the top crying. It feels so good. Cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest ultra methylene blue, but he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended and I forgot to do this. Don't forget when he's on Owen to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. So Stuart, go ahead and take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shove that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people initially about 30 minutes start speaking after a couple hours. But just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now? Now that you have your energy spike?
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely, I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
Several weeks later.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. You were here a few weeks ago. And I do this with every guest, more than 50 of them now. Every person has had clarity, energy, a fog lift is the most common. But what's really good is the long-term effects for your stamina, your energy, your libido, your how hard you can work out. It's amazing. So I had forgotten when he was coming in, we gave him a bottle because he loved it.
Almost gone.
I had forgotten to ask you if you listened to it long-term. So just briefly, tell people the short-term effect and then now a few weeks later, the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, I do some methylene blue about a half hour before, and it just gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
We'll give you some. How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at theoxygenstore.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, now 4 or 5 months ago, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it, I go, I don't know. I was like lifting way more, going way harder. And then I got really exhausted after about a week because it happened, the same thing happened to Rob Dew, who's a great long distance, bike rider. So he's quite the athlete. He said he was biking so hard up hills and stuff that he actually had to pull over because, his heart was going crazy. I mean, this stuff's wild.
Yeah, it's good. I like it better than doing like a 5 hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
It's not a stimulant. It just skips the oxidization process somehow.
So I've been using it while I'm out there doing search and rescue. So I'm almost out.
You're saying you love it for working out. Has it gotten better over time, or what long-term thing have you felt, or if nothing?
Well, I think the main thing is it gives me a better workout, and that has good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I found without even knowing.
Yeah.
And then O'Keefe's like, oh, it made my vision better, and Rob Dew goes, we have a bunch of callers already saying that. Did you see these studies about it, like curing glaucoma? And I'm not going to say, we're not selling it as a drug. I'm not saying it's going to do that. I'm like, God, this stuff's crazy. No, they don't want you to know about it. It's like ivermectin.
Right, exactly. Old school stuff.
But you can't take it if you're on SSRIs. And folks, it's so strong. Talk to your doctor first because it's not a game. Ours is really strong. If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Again, I saw this coming from a while ago. This young woman, former SFU employee, arrested after alleged hate crime towards student caught in viral video.
Eden Deckerhoff, 23, was charged with battery in connection with the incident that transpired Wednesday. According to recent court records, she's accused of confronting a student who court records say was Jewish and was wearing a shirt representing the Israeli Defense Forces when the incident occurred and making profane statements directed at Israel. How dare she? That's illegal. As of Tuesday, Deckerhoff has been released from jail, court documents show. She was charged following an incident into the confrontation conducted on Thursday, just a day after the incident. Law enforcement reviewed the now viral footage of the confrontation, which court's records revealed occurred inside the Leech Recreational Center. The video showed a woman later identified as Deckerhoff and a man later identified as a Florida State student in frame. Court records identified Deckerhoff as a current FSU employee, but FSU spokesperson clarified that she is a former employee. The footage went on to show Deckerhoff flipping off the student who appeared to be filming the video in the recreation center. Per court records, she was also heard in the video making a statement laced with profanity aimed at Israel. They appear to show Deckerhoff hitting the male's shoulder area while attempting to reach for his beverage on the table. Just before the video concluded, the student was observed leaning back in a defensive manner as if he was pushed by the female. But it's okay. He survived, folks. He survived. Don't worry. He was able to handle it. At about 7 p.m., the 23-year-old suspect was seen approaching the student whose court papers show was sitting down at the recreational center on his cell phone. Yeah, they were having a conversation. She appeared to become upset. Moments later, Deckerhoff was seen moving into his personal space and touching his shoulder in a shoving motion while attempting to reach for his beverage. Shortly after, the student was observed leaning back, blah, blah, blah. Surveillance footage also revealed Deckerhoff spoke with a recreational center staff member before she exited the recreational center. The following day, authorities interviewed the student, a recreational center employee who was seen being approached by Deckerhoff shortly after the incident occurred. He was wearing an IDF shirt, which signifies the National Military of Israel. Made contact with him. So let's go to the video now. The guy went on to state that Deckerhoff, quote, definitely just hate crimed him. I've been hate crimed. That woman just hate crimed me. Let's go ahead and roll the video. We'll see if we can't make some observations about it, shall we?
Israel, free Palestine, put it on Barstool FSU. I really don't give a f-. You're an ignorant son of a bitch.
It seemed to me like she was reaching for the phone, probably because she noticed she was being filmed. You know, a couple things about it. For one thing, you don't... You know what I should have done? Just this weekend, Randy Fine participated in a press conference of some sort. Something like Voices for Freedom, Florida, something like that. And he's talking about wearing his yarmulke on the floor of the Congress and being the first congressman ever to wear a yarmulke on the floor of the Capitol. And he says, I'm wearing it because... You know, I want to let little Jewish kids all over the country, you know that they should be proud and not afraid to, you know, express their Jewishness. He says, because places in this country, you know, it's a very big problem. The anti-Semitism, Jews being afraid to be found out, I guess. He says it's a very big problem, but we solve that in Florida. It's not a problem here, he says. It's not a problem in Florida. We solved that. And it just kind of struck me that, I mean, what he means is that they've passed laws to declare it a hate crime to insult Israel or Jews. And so you've got this, I guess, Jewish IDF soldier. They don't say his name. They don't say who he is, whether he's a student or whatever. I guess they said he was a student, but we don't know his name. We don't know if he was in the IDF. We don't know. We don't know what the deal is. But it seems to me like if you go to a college campus wearing the shirt of the IDF at a time when the IDF is pretty blatantly committing a genocide, it's not unlikely that you're going to cause some anger. And you know that. And you know that. And so you're in a way you know, putting yourself at risk of being assaulted. If I put it this way, if I wear a Make America Great Again hat on UT campus, I'm not going to be surprised if someone says F you to me. I'm just not. Now, does that mean that, you know, it'd be okay for them to beat me up? Obviously not, right? I've been thinking about that video, you know, in connection with this similar kind of video, but it was in an In-N-Out in California and there were children. There was like a 12 or like 13 year old kid wearing a Make America Great Again hat and some Hispanic adult man comes up and grabs his drink and throws it in his face and it was all filmed. And of course that didn't, you know, there was no condemnation from the attorney general there. There was no investigation launched. You didn't have congressmen, you know, coming out to demand that this person be charged with battery. I don't know if they ever were charged or ever even identified. It was a much more extreme example of a very similar situation, but much more violent, much more, you know, unfair and one-sided on the side of the attacker. So, you know, I'm trying to keep this in perspective and go, all right, well, if you're just wearing a piece of clothing that expresses your political or spiritual belief and you get attacked for it, that's not fair and that's not okay and that's not how it should be. On the other hand, if I wear a red hat to a college campus, am I going to be surprised that I get cursed at? So was he was taken into custody. I wonder if he, you know, served time for that or whatever. Yeah, similar story, very, very different reactions. So it's a little bit of a different situation if I wear a red hat to college campus, if there have recently been passed laws saying that attacking somebody in a red hat is a hate crime and you'll go to prison for it. It's a little bit different. It smacks to me of like entrapment or something. Or it's like, okay, you've now passed laws to basically say you should be allowed to do things that you know are going to cause a response, to do things that you know are going to be provocative, knowing that if anybody responds, they go to jail for a hate crime. And so when Randy Fine says, we fixed that in Florida, what he means is that in Florida, the Jewish people have been elevated above everybody else. And they now can act with impunity, but if you get riled up by them, if you respond to them in kind, it's a hate crime. I don't like the precedent that this is setting. I don't like that, you know, people feel the right to curse you out or to throw a drink on you because of what you're wearing. I'm against that, and that should be handled for what it is. Okay, if this girl says F you and tries to, you know, smack his phone because he's filming her, okay, maybe she can't go to the student center for a little while. That's an appropriate response. Now, if an adult, you know, attacks a child like the video from the Whataburger, all right, now we're in a little bit of a different situation. And again, you can charge a guy with assault in the same way that you would do if the red hat had nothing to do with it. Or if the IDF shirt had nothing to do with it. So the guy's smiling the whole time in the video. The guy posts the video afterwards with the caption wheezing, i.e. I'm laughing. I'm laughing so hard I'm wheezing because look at how mad this little girl got. And then he goes to the cops and says, I've been hate crimed. Okay. Haha, I'm laughing. I wore a shirt to deliberately provoke people. Now this girl got provoked. Look how funny it is, but also I'm going to get her charged for a hate crime. Isn't that hilarious? So I don't take this seriously. I'm not taking, you know, his outrage seriously. I'm not taking his offense seriously. That's his caption, wheezing. Laugh out loud, right? But then he goes up to a cop and says, I've been hate, quote, I was definitely just hate crimed. Police asked if he would like to press charges, in which police papers revealed he said he would like to make that decision later. The student also declined services from the student's victim advocate program, stating he had other resources in the Jewish community providing support. So again, I think that the justification for this is thin to the point of like non-existence, to where if you're claiming that this, the minorest of events, is worth federal attention and hate crime charges and battery charges and sending this girl to prison and literally ruining her life. I mean, apparently she's been completely kicked off of campus. So, you know, they said she was a former employee. I don't know if she was fired over this. I'd originally been hearing she was a student and that she'd been suspended from classes and not allowed to be on the campus at all anymore. And not that that would be out of line with other instances of this exact kind of situation. You know, it's funny. She says, you know, put me on Florida Barstool or whatever. So I guess that's a common thing. Barstool Sports, people posting videos. I don't know about that, but you know, it does remind me of the Dave Portnoy situation where some guy has a sign that says F the Jews and Dave Portnoy is like, I'm sending you to Auschwitz and I'm going to hunt you down and hire a private investigator and I'm going to ruin your life and destroy you. Because he said F Jews? Like what? Where is the limiting factor? Where is the equal reaction? Where's the justification for these insane overwrought reactions? It doesn't exist. Let the punishment fit the crime. If the crime is you said a word that Dave Portnoy doesn't like, the punishment should be you don't get to go to his bar anymore. That's fine. That's fair. He doesn't want you in the bar. He doesn't have to let you. It's his private property. This is America. That can be the end of that. You want to destroy his life over it? You want to publish his name and talk about how evil he is and how infuriated you are, hoping that something happens to him? I mean, this is sick. This is a really sick psychology. And we see it really pervasive. Dave Portnoy and the way this Eden girl is being treated. And we see it in the way, you know, Israel is conducting their war. There is this imbalance in the reaction that you have to fight against and that you have to be against. And I'm just trying to explain to you that the rhetorical trick they use is by saying, if you're against our insane, overwrought, life-destroying reaction, you must therefore be in favor of assault. Just like if you're against the starvation program being carried out by Israel, it must be because you like Hamas and you're in favor of what they did on October 7th. This isn't even a question. It is not contradictory or hypocritical or anything to say both, yeah, I don't like what that girl did. I don't like that she was just yelling at some guy and, you know, put hands on him. That wasn't great. Same time, you're going to destroy her life for this? You're going to destroy her life for this. She has sinned against the chosen people. Therefore, she now has to have her life destroyed. Okay, you're crazy. You're crazy if you think that. And if you then say, because I'm against destroying her life, I therefore think that Jews should be allowed to be assaulted, then you're not just crazy, you're a liar. You're a liar who's trying to, you know, take the rhetoric to the extremes to try to justify destroying a young girl's life because she's been excited by the intense rhetoric on both sides. I think it's infuriating and unfair. And I actually had a couple of tweets go viral about this. Again, you know, I got a response from Laura Loomer, but you just knew this was coming. You knew that this was what was going to happen next because they'd already passed all these laws to, you know, take some small instance of some crazy liberal girl, bothering a guy into a hate crime charge with battery charges and all this sort of stuff. And remember, this happened at the same time that there was a video of the football players, three black kids, beating the crap out of a white kid, beating him so bad that he got a severe concussion and is no longer able to play football. And these things kind of happen on the same day. Both made motivated by identity, one by race, one by ethnicity or nationality or religion. The reaction to these two things were wildly different, and what actually happened were wildly different. You'll notice in that last video, the one that the victim himself updated with a laughing face, nothing happened to him. Literally nothing happened to him. Worst thing you can say is she tried to like push his phone away because he was filming her. Okay, in the other case, the guy was beaten unconscious. And we have a little bit of a bifurcation, a discrepancy between the reactions to these two. So you got two situations with two very different societal responses. In situation one, it was a racial attack against a white person. There were three perpetrators and one victim. He was physically beaten, got severe concussions and debilitating injuries. The second situation was a religious attack against a Jewish person. One perpetrator, one victim. Mean words were said angrily. And I guess she touched his phone. In the first case, it was basically total media silence. Not a big story, not a national story, no comments from any politicians of any sort. It really only spread on X and a few local papers picked it up, mostly silence. The media downplayed and ignored the racial component. I mean, I read articles about the beating. Three black guys said, we think you said the N-words, we're going to beat you until you're unconscious. Never mentioned the race of perpetrator or the victim, despite the fact that race was a key component of the conflict, not just an arbitrary observation about what happened, but it was a racially motivated attack. They downplay that. They don't mention it. They don't want it to be a part of the story. The perpetrators who beat the kid, ruined his football career, were not punished. They're still playing football. They're still on the team. They weren't even kicked off the team, let alone have charges against them. In fact, the victim has had to file a personal lawsuit against people who beat him up because there have been no charges filed against them. On the other hand, with the other situation, you have a massive nationwide media firestorm. The United States Attorney General took up the case. FSU launches an investigation. The perpetrator was suspended from college and barred from campus. She's now been charged with battery. The USAG office launched a full investigation into anti-Semitism at large at FSU. Congressmen got involved, pressuring FSU to do more to protect Jews. Support services and therapists were brought in to counsel students about the threat of anti-Semitism on their campus. So I say, when a white kid being beaten bloody by a group of black guys because of his race gets totally ignored, but a Jew hearing mean words invokes a nationwide panic and multiple responses from the federal government, we are in an effed up system of Jewish supremacy that makes a mockery of the concept of justice being equality under the law, which is really unacceptable. It is in flagrant disregard of fundamental characteristics of our country. And the whole point of America existing is that you do not uplift one group of people above another. You do not give special privileges, special protections against one religion over another. This is obviously, flagrantly, an inversion of our First Amendment. And we shouldn't stand for it. And I personally am not going to let the likes of Randy Fine or Laura Loomer, you know, try to portray this as some question about whether Jews are allowed to be beaten or not. Now, the question is whether Americans are being treated fairly or whether one group of people is given significantly outsized attention, care, support, monies, resources, laws written for them. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's outrageous, and it can't go on. It really can't go on. And has to do with why Trump's approval is absolutely cratering. It's the lowest it's ever been, and it's only getting lower. Meanwhile, leaks reveal Netanyahu deliberately imposed starvation in Gaza to force Hamas to surrender. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejected calls from senior ministers to advance ceasefire negotiations and deliberately restricted all aid to Gaza in order to force the surrender from Hamas. Internal government transcripts published by Israeli news outlet Channel 13 have revealed. The transcripts are from an Israeli war cabinet meeting on the 1st of March, showing Netanyahu ignored repeated calls from senior defense officials to move to the second phase of ceasefire agreement in order to secure the release of Israeli captives and then to renew hostilities. After Netanyahu instead chose to unilaterally break the ceasefire in March and bar all aid to Gaza in the hopes of forcing a surrender by Hamas. This was despite Hamas complying with the talks, contrary to the war cabinet's expectations. So every time they say just release the hostages, just remember there was an agreement to release the hostages that Benjamin Netanyahu deliberately scuttled and ignored because he wants the conflict to continue, shutting down aid to deliberately create the starvation conditions that they deny creating on purpose. However, while they are simultaneously denying it exists, they're also approving it exists. Most Israelis not bothered by reports of suffering and famine in Gaza, new poll shows. The vast majority of Israelis say they are not troubled by reports of famine and suffering in Gaza. The survey showed 79% of Jews in Israel were not troubled or troubled at all, whereas 86% of Arab respondents said they were somewhat or very troubled by the reports about the war on Gaza. Arab respondents in the survey refer to Palestinian citizens of Israel. When the question was broken down by political affiliation, it shows there was a far greater concern among the left for the suffering and hunger, with 70% showing concern, whereas only 32% and 6% among the center and right, respectively, are personally troubled by the reports. This survey was conducted between the 27th and 31st of July. So again, it's like they create the starvation conditions, you know, on purpose. A lot of people want to blame Netanyahu for this, but obviously 80% of Israelis are in favor of it as well, according to this poll. I don't think you can blame Netanyahu entirely for that. You also have a pretty interesting story here. Senior Haredi leader threatens global struggle like never before to avoid IDF draft. So the Orthodox community in Israel avoids the draft, evades the draft, and refuses to go fight for the IDF, as is, you know, a requirement for all citizens of Israel. They have for a long time not been forced to participate in the army. I really should have gotten into this earlier because it goes to the heart of where Israel goes now. And maybe what I'll do tomorrow is I'll go back and find like the videos from like the October 8th, 2023 when we talked about this, because it has always been an established fact of this conflict that Israel cannot easily go into Gaza. They do not have the manpower for it. They don't have the men available, let alone people willing to go into the tunnels where they're almost certainly going to be booby-trapped or killed somehow. So, you know, we explained very early on, the only possible way to defeat Hamas in Gaza was to first systematically level the entire place, then go in. But even then, the tunnels still exist. The system still exists. Hamas is still operating at a higher level than it's been for the rest of this conflict. They're still staging ambushes. They've killed more soldiers this month than, like, the rest of the war combined. So they haven't actually defeated Hamas. They still have to go in there with boots on the ground, but they don't have the manpower and they're not willing to sacrifice the soldiers necessary to do it, which is why they need America to be involved, because the Marines would go into the tunnels and clear them out. The IDF soldiers will not and will refuse to, and they'll use robots if anything. So they're worried about their manpower. So now they're saying, we got to get the Orthodox to join. The Orthodox are saying, we're not going to join. And if you try to make us join, we're going to, quote, perform civil quiet disobedience, including, quote, collapsing large companies or banks. We are getting close to a civil war. But here's the clarification I want to make for you. They're not against the war. Okay. The ultra-Orthodox are threatening civil war because they don't want to fight. They're in favor of the war. They just don't want to fight. They just want to continue to exist in their very comfortable existence where they're paid to study the Torah and never have to fight or work. So that's why they're protesting.
Just got in my methylene blue, ultra methylene blue USP grade from thealexjonesstore.com. And I've heard all the rants and raves about this. I'm really interested to see how I'm going to feel. I'm going to do a third dropper and then some water right now, and I am going to see, yeah, that's plenty. Maybe that's a little bit more. I'm gonna mix this up, and
pretty excited to see how this is going to work. So after I fully drink this, I will let everybody know the effects of hopefully of what is the unlimited power.
What's going on, Xers? Jay Rocket here. Just giving you all an update. It's been an hour past. Doing the one dropper of the ultramethylene blue USB grade at the alexjonesstore.com. Currently at the gym right now. And it's hard to explain what I feel other than I do feel the mental clarity. I don't have any cloudy thoughts. My focus seems relaxed, but very on point. And the energy kind of feels clean. No jittery, things like that. I haven't really felt any tingling or anything. Maybe if I'll probably take an extra dropper next time. This is on an empty stomach as well. So definitely feel just cool, calm, and collected, but very focused, very centralized. It's a very calm zen feeling. So if you haven't gotten to try this stuff yet, y'all need to go to the alexjonesstore.com and get your methylene blue today.